Good afternoon. I would like to call to order a public hearing. The Tompkins County Legislature will hold a public hearing at 5:30 in the legislative chambers concerning the Tompkins Courtland Community College operating budget for 2021 through 2022. Is anyone here for a public comment on the topic of TC3? Okay. I see no hands, and we have received no forms for public comment. I would like to close the public hearing for public comment. I would like to open the meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Today is Tuesday, July 20th, 2021, and it is 5:30. If you could all join me for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. If we could have a roll call of members, please.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Henry Granison.
Present.
Rich John. Dan Klein.
Here.
Ann Corman.
Present.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Leslyn McBean-Claiborne has asked to be excused. Dave McKenna.
Here.
Glenn Morey.
Here.
Martha Robertson.
Here.
Leslie Schill has asked to be excused. Mike Sigler.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Shauna Black.
Here.
We have 11 members present.
Thank you. This evening, we do not have a presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices. We will not be having an executive session this afternoon, this evening. And I would like to reorder some business around. I would like to move resolutions G and H up after the legislative privilege of the floor. I would also like to move resolution F after our financial report from Director of Finance, Rick Snyder. Let's start off by privilege of the floor for the public. Welcome back to everyone. If you would like to speak on privilege of the floor, I would ask that people please fill out one of the blue forms that's located at the back table. Before we get started, I would just like to go over some of the rules for speaking under privilege of the floor. An individual may speak no longer than 3 minutes. We do have the clock on the TV here. A speaker will not raise their voice. A speaker will not use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. A speaker will not speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, a speaker will leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. A speaker will not cause a disruption, and if asked to leave, will leave the chambers. With that said, welcome to the public. We are happy to have you, happy to see you today. Let's start off public comment with our friend Faye Gugakis. Hello and welcome, Faye.
It's nice to see everybody. I have a number of concerns. I want to first start with the public speaking rules, because 2 weeks ago I was at the Common Council meeting, and when I filled out the slip there, Julie Holcomb said to me, "I want you to know there's three people ahead of you." And I said, "What do you mean?" She says, "Well, people are signing on the internet. We've been doing that with Zoom." And I was horrified, and I expressed that at the council meeting. It took up some of my time, as this is doing now, with what I wanted to say. But, you know, it's unimaginable to me that people don't see how unfair that is. If you're physically coming here to speak, you should be the first ones to speak. People are at home, you know, using Zoom or whatever. They're home. I have to go back home, not to mention rain's coming. You know, I'm on my bike, and I just don't understand. The Cuomo said we're coming back to normal, you know, and that's not normal. having somebody tell me someone on Zoom is ahead of you. So please, please be fair. Please use technology in a just way, because honestly, I think technology is going to oppress people in the long run. But that's another 3 minutes for another day, and I do want to talk about it, and I have talked about it in the past. So that this issue took up half my time, just so it's sad for me, you know, because I didn't expect that to happen. So I really would appreciate if people that are physically here go first. The second thing is the enforcement of the changes in the police department. I'm going to make this really short, just a couple sentences. I don't have a computer. That's another story for another day. A lot of it is by choice. I don't have a cell phone. I'm very concerned about these technologies. They make things simple, but like I said, I will discuss that again another time. But you know, we're coming out of COVID, and to change something so drastic as public safety is very concerning. Oh, 50 minutes. Okay. The third thing is Bike Walk Tompkins, from what I understand, wants to bring back another Lime, a different company, but like Lime. And I am totally opposed to them bringing back, and I'm just putting out the censors for you, because we can't allow what happened before to happen again. And the fourth thing is tinted windows, because it's extremely unsafe. I've been saying this for years, and it's like nothing gets done. In New York State, you have to see who's in the car. And the fact that people are not, I mean, I'm a cyclist, and it's a huge concern. It should be a concern for everybody. So anyway, it's nice to see everybody again, and I, you know, there's so much to say, as always, and let's have a good beginning again. Thank you.
Thank you, Faye. Welcome back. Mr. Bob Lynch.
Good evening. Robert Lynch, 175 Gray Road, Town of Enfield. And full disclosure, I'm a member of the Enfield Town Board, and I'm also on the ballot for county legislator. Presume you have a house fire. That's too bad. But your house burns to the ground. You pull a trailer into the backyard just to put a roof over your head. The good news is the insurance adjuster comes and writes you a check for the full value of that house so you can rebuild it again. Well, you park the money in your checking account. That night, you want to celebrate, so you go down to the corner bar, buy a round of drinks, maybe two, maybe three rounds for the boys. You've got the money. Next day, you and your partner go to that travel agent and book that trip to Hawaii you've always wanted. Of course, you got the money. One thing leads to another. Further, pretty soon you've bought a timeshare in Orlando. You had the money. Now you've got to build the house. You look in the checking account. You don't have the money anymore. That's what I worry about with the cash for capital plan, that no doubt you, the county legislature, will put three-quarters of the ARP money, three-quarters of $19.8 million, into tonight. I hold no illusions you're going to do it. I know that. I just ask you be very, very careful about it, because money has a way of burning a hole in anyone's pocket, including a county legislature. I worry that with that money in there without a specific purpose, what you might do is you might spend a whole lot of it on a brand-new building. That's not a rescue plan. That's a want. And you should know the difference between wants and needs. I'll quote Leslie Shill from last night's committee meeting. We are not getting to the pain places. There is an immediate and acute need, which is the reason the funding is coming our way because of the pandemic. I am concerned that we will not be helping some folks who are in real need. Now, I remember Mike Sigler's comment from a couple of weeks ago at an earlier committee meeting. I haven't heard anybody pipe in to me saying we should use this money on buildings. Nobody. I hear things like mental health. And yes, I hear things about potholes. People want to patch potholes. And Mike, to his credit, would use some of the money to patch every pothole in Tompkins County. Good luck. I urge you tonight, you're going to be spending that money. You're going to be reserving it for cash for capital. I know that. But remember, the money is purposed. It's purposed for people. And please respect that money as being purposed for people. Spend it wisely. Use a lot of discretion when you spend it on buildings, if you spend it as cash for capital. be very conservative about it and be very respectful of it. Remember, it's purposed for people. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Welcome back. Let's see if there are any municipal officials in the audience that would like to report. I do not see any. Oh, is Duxon? Is Duxon here? Hey, Duxon, how you doing?
I think some things that would be of interest to the entire community is tomorrow at Planning and Economic Development, IURA will be presenting their preferred developer for Inlet Island. And so council will go through the process of transferring some city-owned land to the Ithaca Urban Renewal Agency, who will then make a final selection on who the preferred developer is for that bit of land. Demolition has started on Green Street Garage. I don't know if demolition has exactly started, but the money's there, it's been authorized, and work has started. As I'm sure you've noticed, it's been closed off for a couple of months now. And
Dustin, could you turn your volume up slightly, please?
Oh, sure.
Thank you.
I guess the other, you know, our meeting earlier this month wasn't terribly eventful, other than something that the public should know about is that we authorized the first taxicab rate increase in 5 years, I believe, adding $1 to each type of fare throughout the city and to, you know, the airport and the hospital and whatnot. Otherwise, it's kind of quiet this summer. I will note that there is an effort by a lot of constituents, and that's something that Seth Merton and I talked about, which is bringing good cause eviction to the city of Ithaca. It recently passed yesterday, I think, in the city of Albany. Good cause eviction means that tenants have the right to renew their leases, except for very specific lease violations, such as, you know, violence, cause of destruction, non-payment of rent, and things like that. So that is a discussion you can look forward to us having in the months to come. That's it for now.
Thanks, Duxon. Are there any questions for Duxon?
Hi, Duxon. I just had three questions. The Reimagining Public Safety Working Group, was that onboarded? I thought maybe it was. I just wanted to see how that went. And is that committee paid or is that volunteer? I can't remember what that was. Somebody asked me. I'll find out. On that.
Thanks for asking about that. Yes, it has been onboarded. We've gotten to know each other, and the work should start soon. Our chair, though, will be the primary spokesperson for that task force work, and so I'll leave it to him. That's Eric Rosario, former alderperson for the second ward on City of Ithaca. So he'll give updates to, I think he'll speak for all of us in the future, so you can look forward to that. But our work hasn't actually started yet, and it is unpaid, all volunteer.
Cool. All right, thanks. And the judging, how's that going? I know, completely separate. I jump around.
That's a good question. I don't know. I meant to, this was a topic on Facebook too, and I've been meaning to ask, so I have to get an update on how that is going. But the dewatering facility behind Lowe's was completed last summer, and so the work hasn't started yet. I expect it will soon.
Okay. Just one quick question about the good cause evictions. I didn't plan to ask this, but since you brought it up, I mean, I guess the question would be, what would be a good cause? I mean, if somebody wants to move into their house again, would that constitute a good cause? Or if somebody had a family member who needed a place to live, would that be good cause? I mean, it's still the person's property. They would still own it. So I guess the detail I would ask about that is, what would constitute good cause? I mean, you had just mentioned things like violence and stuff, but there are other things that don't involve crime that are, I don't know, I would think would constitute good cause.
But yeah, that's a good question too. That'll be a detail for a debate. In New Jersey, the scenarios you laid out, like wanting to move back into a rental property for as a primary residence, would in fact be a good cause. So I don't remember if that is included in the Albany version. I think it is actually. But if that's a model for us, then that would certainly be a good cause. Yep.
I just want to note that Dawson said I had three good questions.
Three. There you go.
He's an excellent politician.
That's.
you set the bar high, Mike.
That's right.
Martha?
There's high, you know, for obvious reasons, there's high interest in, there has been for years, but after this year's, the summer's rains and seeing the flooding in Europe, very high interest. So I'll definitely get back to you all.
Thank you, Dawson.
Martha? Thanks, Sean. Thanks, Dawson. Good to see you. As some of us are getting out and having to drive to meetings now, I'm suddenly faced with construction that I just, it's kind of hard to fathom everywhere you turn. The bridge over whichever bridge that is, on the way to Wegmans, is that going to be, it's open today, this afternoon. I hope it's not, are they going to actually repave it? It's a mess. I mean, it's great that it was navigable at least. And then I worried when I saw then the detail, that the bridge closing on, is it Titus or South Cuba Street actually starting July 26th. Like, I'm not sure how you're going to get across the inlet there. Is what's the plan? Is there a plan? I just wonder.
I'm not sure about the plan. I think they get to work. Yeah, the work season is brief, and they get to things when they can. I'm worried about the South Cuba Street bridge closure as well because it is lengthy. But I will. Yeah, I don't know, to be honest, but I will ask our DPW to take all this. I mean, they do already, to the best of their ability, take these kind of factors into consideration. I know it's difficult. And
do you know how long South Cuba will be closed?
I don't remember offhand, but it might be till the end of the year.
Okay, I won't even mention College Avenue, so... All right. Thanks very much. I know. I mean, the work has to get done. There's no other way around it. If Mike's going to fix every pothole in the county, that means work. And so appreciate that it's getting done. Thank you.
And yes, to confirm, South Cuba Street Bridge will be closed for the rest of 2021.
Like roadways are just a lose-lose situation. We complain when there are potholes, and then we complain whenever they're working to do new pavement. So, sorry, Duxon. Welcome to being a
figure.
It is frustrating, but I'm happy to see the work. We've gotten a lot of good state and federal support for these projects recently, which helps.
Great. Any other questions for Duxon?
I see no other hands. Thank you, Duxon, for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. And it is time for legislator privilege of the floor. Any comments, questions, announcements from our legislators? Deborah Dawson and then Dan Klein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of things. First of all, last night at the expanded budget committee meeting, we started a second conversation related to our first conversation about dedicating a not insubstantial portion of our fund balance to community projects. And we wanted to wait on moving forward with that discussion until we heard Rick's report today about the fund balance and the audited financials. I have been in communication with Shauna, who's been in communication with Kathy throughout the day, about how and when that conversation should proceed. There was some concern about not putting it on tonight's agenda and therefore having an open meetings law problem. So Kathy and Shauna have scheduled another expanded budget committee meeting. I know it's everyone's favorite, for August 10th. And I just wanted to inform all of you and any members of the public who are watching that we're not done with the money. So that's the public service announcement. And then my personal statement is a plea to any members of the public who have yet to be vaccinated. Both Ronnie and I have had occasion to visit our doctor in the last week or so. He is very alarmed and very concerned at the uptick in cases, especially the widening impact of the Delta variant. He noted that 99% of the cases that they're seeing are among unvaccinated people. And my personal concern, as I've been trying to figure out how I could safely visit my daughter and her family, is that I know as a fully vaccinated person, I can contract COVID. I will not have the disease, but I will carry the ability to spread the disease to my unvaccinated grandchildren who are 3 and almost 6. They can't get vaccinated. It's not their choice. We are seeing teenagers and children and very young adults in hospitals, very sick. Even if they survive the disease, there's the specter of long COVID out there, which would be particularly tragic for a very young person. So if you're wavering, if you haven't been vaccinated yet and you're listening, please consider your position, if not for yourself, then for the benefit of other people. Thanks.
Thank you, Deborah. Dan Klein.
Thank you. I wanted to talk for a minute about Green Springs Natural Cemetery in Newfield. I'm on the board of directors of Green Springs, and I'm a plot owner. Green Springs was started 15 years ago, and at the time it was one of only, it was the fifth natural cemetery in the entire United States. Since then, a lot more have opened. It's been a bit of a movement. Green Springs occupies about 160 acres. It's got enough room estimated to bury people for the next 400 years. The area is maintained as an upland grassland bird habitat, which is a fairly rare habitat around here. And the reason I'm mentioning all this is because Green Springs is having its 15th anniversary celebration before our next legislature meeting, so this is my opportunity to mention it. And the public is invited. It's on Saturday, August 14th, from 11 to 2. And there'll be a little bit of food and drink there. There'll be a little bit of a business meeting and a little bit of entertainment and the opportunity to just roam around, see the place, ask questions of people that work there and know more about it. And just so you know, too, that it is open all the time for people to go there and look around as they want. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Mike Lane and then Martha Robertson.
About 4 years ago, our county experienced something unusual and pretty nice. It had to do with our educational institutions. Cornell, Ithaca College, and Tompkins-Cortland Community College. All three of them selected new presidents at that same time. They all happen to be women. For the first time at TC3, not the first time at the other institutions, but it was pretty neat to have these three women coming forward to lead these institutions. None of us knew then, they didn't know then, that they were going to go through the trials of COVID, which certainly have racked the plans for the institutions and what they can do. Their student numbers, other things have been diminished, not so much the Ivy, but certainly the IC and TC3. I want to say thanks to the people who've been leading these institutions. We learned recently, in the last 2 weeks, that Shirley Colliado at IC and Orinthia Montague at TC3 are both leaving for other positions. It saddens me that they aren't staying longer. I know they've gone through, and I haven't been. I've been close to the board and the leadership at TC3, but certainly not at IC. But I think we need to step back and think about the changes that will be coming for these institutions, and our best wishes to the people who are leaving. I'm sorry to see them going. I hope that our institutions will rally and spring back to where they ought to be as quickly as possible. But when you lose students the way we've seen happen, particularly at IC and at TC3, it takes a while to retrench. But so my hat's off to those three presidents, and certainly I'm sorry to see two of them leaving.
Thank you, Mike. Martha Robertson.
Thank you, John. A couple things relative to before we meet next as a legislature. So in case the public is on this kind of first and third Tuesday, we're not meeting on the first Tuesday of August, so the next meeting here is the 17th. Between now and then, the New York State Independent Redistricting Commission is holding, they've already started public hearings about redistricting in New York State. We of course passed a resolution at the last meeting. You're supposed to sign up for hearings according to the region that you're in. We are considered in the Southern Tier and Central New York region, and our hearing is Monday, August 9th. The hearings are all starting at 2:00 and then kind of going, I think, until whenever. They say they're going to be virtual, so people can, I mean, you can go in person, but I think you recommend that people sign up to go virtual, and I have signed up for a slot. The redistricting census data, I believe, are supposed to be coming out August 16th. So it'll be interesting, then we'll kind of see where the numbers are. So then the work will really start in earnest. So that's something, and if the members of the public want to testify, they're certainly encouraged to do that. The website is nyirc.gov/meetings, so New York Independent Redistricting Commission /gov. So I appreciate the legislature weighing in on that. Deborah, the meeting that you mentioned for as an expanded budget committee, what time would that be on the 10th?
I would assume Kathy scheduled it for 5:30.
Yes.
5:30. Okay. Thank you. As far as community needs, I wanted to mention the Ithaca Voice has a series called Home, Ithaca's Housing, Past, Present, and Future. They've already published the past and present. I think the future segment is coming up. So if you just go to IthacaVoice.com and type in home, just the word home, I think it'll pop up, or just Ithaca Housing. Really a good summary of kind of
where we are. I mean, it's a crisis. The past, present, and future of Ithaca's housing crisis. And they interview a whole lot of people that are players in the whole market. And it's, I think, something that we really need to pay attention to. So I encourage folks to take a look. Thank you.
Thank you, Martha. Ann Corman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to add on to what my colleague Mike Lane was saying regarding the presidents of Ithaca College and TC3. I would, and I'm just going to call out what he said. Mike said that, I think he used the word neat, that these two women were able to be appointed to those positions. I would like, in my words, so I'm going to phrase it in a different way. For two women, and also they're women of color, I would like to say retroactively, it's about time, and that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Anyone else for legislative privilege on the floor? Deborah Dawson?
Yeah. Faye Gagakis left me a note asking me to please tell you all that she had to leave before it rains because she rides a bike, and she will watch us on the weekend report on cable TV. So.
Okay. Thank you, Deborah. I see no other hands. Let's work on the resolutions G and H in regards to TC3. And Deborah, as chair of Budget, Finance, and Personnel, if you could please move those resolutions.
Yes. Let's see. I will start with Resolution G, resolution to fund Tompkins County's share of costs for year one of the Tompkins-Cortland Community College Workforce and Career Development Pilot Program, ID number 10176. And I move that now.
Seconded by Dave McKenna. And do we have someone from TC3 to talk a little bit to that resolution?
There he is.
Hi, Bill. Welcome to the legislature. Good to have you.
Good here.
Great. Would you like to talk to us a little bit about the first resolution that we have on the floor?
Sure. TC3 has always had somewhat of a workforce development program, but it was very, it was a niche program. It was more in response to businesses seeking help with getting certain types of people skill sets. And so it was a very informal type of program. It was set up as an organization that needed to become a profit center. So we had to have the business before we would create the expenses. And we saw the opportunity with this pandemic and with the students and the profile of the students, especially so many of them leaving high school and actually not coming to college at all, that we thought we might want to formalize the program. And so a little over a year ago, we put in for a grant. We that grant, we hired somebody who's an expert in the area. She assessed our business, she assessed the market, and she helped the organization put together a 3-year plan that puts the positions in place that best serves this particular market. And so it gets assumed by the college. It ties directly back to some of the new opportunities that we have to create micro-credentials in a very short period of time, not having to go through a 2-to-3-year cycle with SUNY. So it allows us to respond to market needs very quickly. We're tied very closely to both counties and the workforce development folks there in picking what industries to build. And so in order to do this, we needed to some form of a commitment to fund the program over 3 years because it will take some time to build it. We'll have to go hire people. We'll have to provide some type of commitment to keep them on payroll. And so we did put together roughly a 6-page business plan. That business plan was vetted by both counties, legislators, those that wished to come. There were lots of questions. Everybody that was at those meetings supported it by the time we were done. and so we're going forward with it. So it's a $750,000 three-year commitment, $200,000 the first year, $350,000 the second year, and $200,000 the third year. We believe it will self-sustain itself fourth year beyond. We do have plenty of great metrics to monitor students that are interested in the program and what programs they graduate from and where they end up, along with the businesses that participate in the program to help us develop the criteria and curriculum.
Great. Thank you very much. I want to thank you personally for inviting our legislature to meet with you beforehand to explain your vision for this. I think all of us that went to the presentation were very impressed and really bought into the idea and the vision that you and your colleagues have put forth. Are there any questions for Bill Talbot? I see none. Let's vote. All those in favor, please raise your hand. That is unanimous. Thank you very much, Mr. Talbot. And we have one more resolution. If you could all please look in your red folders, there is a revised of Resolution H. Deborah, would you like to move it?
Yes. Kathy, do I move the one in the...
You should move the version that came out of the committee.
Okay. So I will move the resolution on page 17 of your packets. Resolution H, adoption of the 2021-2022 operating budget, Tompkins-Cortland Community College, document ID 10175.
And Mike Lane will second that. And would someone like to move the amended version? Moved by Rich, seconded by Martha.
And that's friendly.
Okay. Are there any questions or comments? Martha?
Yeah, just to kind of make sure the public knows this, so the 1.6% decrease in Tompkins County's share is not because we're cutting the funding, but that our share of the student population has decreased a bit. Is that the total reason for the 1.6? Okay.
Great.
All right. Thank you.
And Bill, did you have any comments to this resolution?
I could take questions or I could give you a brief statement about it, but hopefully it's self-evident.
Okay. Any questions for Bill? Henry?
Yeah, Bill, do you know, I know in past years, prior years, we haven't given you payments in quarters. We've hurried up the money a little bit in terms of doing that. Do you anticipate that we have to do it this year again?
We're coming very, very close, but I believe the answer to that question is no, because we have access to HERF funds, the federal HERF funds, that we're allowed to draw down. And so we're drawing those down against last year's and this year's revenue shortfalls. And it's going in the bank to help fund the 23-24 academic year. So I think we've got sufficient cash to make it through. It's very close, but I think we're okay. We'll probably come within a couple hundred thousand, quite frankly. It's that close.
Any other questions for Bill? Okay, I see none. Please remember that we are passing the resolution that is edited and in your red folders. Adoption of the 2021 through 2022 operating budget, Tompkins-Cortland Community College. All those in favor? That's unanimous.
Thank you very much, Bill, for joining us tonight. And let's see here. Now we will move on to the chair's report. I just have a short report this evening. We would like to send our best wishes and thoughts to our chair, Leslyn McBean Claiborne, in her travels to Guyana to visit her family. There's been a death in the family, so we wish her safe travels. This evening for my chair's report, I would like to thank our constituents that took the time to fill out our online survey surrounding priorities for the American Rescue Plan money. All legislators have received the responses, and we met last night in an expanded budget meeting to discuss how we would like to move forward with the monies. We would continue to ask for your patience, and we are working with staff, legislators, and outside agencies to build a process that will be fair and equitable. We also realize this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that our county would be granted close to $20 million, and we want to spend that money wisely. As we look over the next month, you'll notice our outward county buildings opening to the public. The Department of Motor Vehicles will offer appointments from 8:30 to 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Some services will be available to walk-ins from 8:30 a.m. to 12:45 p.m. and again from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Appointments will be given priority, and in August, you will no longer be required to make an appointment except for permit testing. I'd also like to thank our administration team and finance team for their hard work and dedication over the past month. As we embark on the beginning of our budget process, receiving ARPA funds and hiring staff, they continue to rise to the occasion. Lastly, I'd like to send a shout out to our public health and mental health departments. We enjoyed a wonderful picnic last Friday that celebrated the anniversaries of many of our staff. The one thing I want to make sure every meeting we do is to recognize our staff and the importance of their jobs and service to our county. The staff in both of these departments have been crucial in our success during this pandemic, and words really cannot describe how grateful we all are to them. So thank you. Next, we will have a special presentation from Rick Snyder in regards to our annual financial report for 2020. You're on, Rick.
Thank you, Shauna, and thank you, legislators, for taking time to review our annual financial statements for the year 2020. Just a few introductory remarks. I'd like to mention that the financial report has been received by the legislative clerk, and the emailed electronic version I sent to every legislator about a week ago, so you each would be able to read that on your own. There's five documents that are attached. One is an executive summary, and one is the actual financial report. The others are some letters that the auditors have supplied. The Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee members each received and reviewed the report, and the same committee heard the auditor's formal presentation of the report at the last Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee meeting. And tonight's presentation is an attempt just to bring to you some of the things that they either did not mention in their report or what I feel are highlights and may be germane to your discussion on ARPA funding. There is also a resolution that will be asking you to pass after this presentation that approves the financial statements. I'd like to point out that the executive summary, again, it's that small, separate document, gives 5 years' worth of data in a very concise format, so you can easily look at the various funds looking at 5 years, all tabulated side by side, and that's for each of our major funds. There's also a section in the big report called Management's Discussion and Analysis, or MD&A. This is the section that I write with the auditors, and we try to explain in plain English the best as we can what the highlights are for the county, and summarizing some of the data in smaller, easier-to-read tables. It also lists issues that we encompassed during that fiscal year and possibly in subsequent years, and you'll find some interesting reading there on how we approach COVID, some of the measures that were taken as we went through that. I know you're all familiar with that from many presentations on that, but it's a nice summary on what was done in 2020 that allowed the county to work its way through the pandemic. There's also a brief summary on measures that were taken to pass the 2021 budget, the year that we're in, knowing that COVID was still upon us. So that's all in the MD&A, and I have printed copies of this financial report. If anybody wants a copy, a hard copy, I used to give copies to everybody and then I got them all back. But I just thought I'd let you know, if you would like a printed copy, please see me after the meeting or email me. And I have some of those available here tonight if you'd like a hard copy. And as with all our financial reports and budgets, these will be available on the county's website. Hooray, it worked. I came with a little bit of fear and trepidation because this is a kind of a hybrid model between Zoom, which I'm very used to over the last 18 months or so, and a live presentation. We're kind of combining the best of both. But the independent auditor's report has some comments in the very beginning. Let's see if I can make it work. Oh, I guess, there we go. We received an unmodified opinion, which is the best opinion the auditors can give. This simply means that our actual financial statements present clearly, without a doubt, the trueness and fairness of all the accounting that we do in each and every fund. It also is an unmodified opinion on what we call the CFA. A CFA is the single audit, which deals with auditing federal funds, like ARPA money, which we'll be auditing. And the CFA stands for Schedule of Expenditures of Federal Awards. And that particular document is at the very end of the big book, the financial report. And we'll talk a little bit more about that a little later on. It also shows that our internal controls are good because their audited opinion says no instances of noncompliance or internal control weaknesses. That's available on page 74 in a separate report that the auditors give just on our internal controls. The general fund recorded an increase of $3.1 million, and we ended the year with a fund balance of $57.4 million. Of that, $48 million was unassigned. Sales tax, which we'll look at a little bit closely later on, came in $3.5 million under budget. Remember, at one point we were thinking we would maybe be down as much as $11 million. I think one of our reports recently said that we would be down about $4 million. The final report tells us that sales tax is just $3.5 million under budget for the year. 2019, in comparison, came in $2.4 million over budget. Casino revenue came in $0.7 million under budget. That's just $700,000 under budget. But the last 2 years came in $0.8 million each year over their original budgets. That just gives you a little bit of a comparison to see the fluctuation over the last couple of years. I have to scroll this way. County as a whole. The county's net position, when we look just at the government activities, went from $132.7 million to $129.8 million. Of this amount, a negative $39 million, I'm just rounding it, was an unrestricted deficit, a result of the recognition of OPEB and pension liabilities. This is more thoroughly discussed by the auditors on page 10 of the small executive summary. Now, when we're talking about county's net position, this is when we homogenize and bring together all the funds of the county into one big report in the beginning of the financial statements. Those government activities actually went down. One of the leading indicators when you're looking at any business, whether it's profit or non-profit or government, is this net position figure. When net position goes up, that's usually a good sign. When net position goes down, it's usually a bad sign. The reason for this $39 million of unrestricted deficit and why it's due to OPEB, OPEB is other benefits that are payable such as our health insurance, other than pension. And the main thing that we have to consider in that separate GASB 75 report is the funding of our long-term retiree health insurance. And that went up and has been going up considerably over the past years. There's another portion of our long-term liabilities that are our pension liabilities under New York State, and that has gone up significantly. So almost all of that deficit is created by the long-term view of what we'll have to be paying out in other than pension benefits and pension benefits over the long term. And that's, when I say long term, that's like a 30-year period. Now, GASB says, and the law says, that you're not actually allowed to fund those deficits. You pay them as you go each and every year as part of your regular budget process. But we do have to report them as liabilities. So a greater detail of this particular deficit can be found on page 10 of the executive summary. And our net investments in capital assets, that's the infrastructure and things that we build and things that you can see, that decreased by $0.8 million or 0.5%. Government activities had revenues of $205.6 million compared to $217 million, a decrease of $11.3 million. Government activities had expenses of $208.5 million compared to $205.6 million, which was an increase of $2 million. Now, when we talk government activities, this is not the same as the general fund. The general fund is a smaller fund. Government activities includes everything that's not an enterprise fund, not a business type fund. So when we roll up all the other funds that are government type funds, that's what these numbers reflect. And that is a decrease in the revenues and an increase in the expenses. The single audit report, which I alluded to before, which is at CIFA, that reports federal award programs in an amount of $36.3 million. So if you added up all the federal grants and awards that we got in 2020, that was 36.3. I believe the number last year was around 27 or 28 million. So that's an increase in federal award programs. Short and long-term obligations, that's basically our debt, both bands and bonds and leases and other related debt. At the end of the year, total $197.9 million, and that was an increase of $61 million from 2019. That was due to our amount of bands going up by $7.3 million, i.e. the airport. Yeah. OPEB, which again is that health insurance benefit over the long term, other than pension liabilities, that OPEB cost went up $23 million, and the pension liability itself went up $30.8 million. That explains the increase of our short and long-term obligations. This chart shows our investment in capital assets over 8 years, and again, as I reflected in the other screen, this $18 million is pretty much in line with what we would call an average year. You can see as you go across the scale here, we had some years where it was less and some years where it was right around $18 million. Last year was extraordinarily high. I'll allow you to guess what that might have been. Things that fly in the air. And that's not there. That's not alluding to the launch that took place this morning. That was keeping our planes in the air. So you can see we're back on track now, down to a more normal or average pacing of our investment in capital assets. This is a slide that I think Mike asked for quite a few years ago, and so we've included each year our outstanding bonded debt in millions compared to debt as a percentage of our debt limit. And I hope this works.
Now, this number doesn't include the, does this include the OPEB and the pension, or doesn't it?
No, this is just bonded debt.
Okay.
When we're looking at our bonds, when we're thinking of the constitutional debt limit, the state basically has a formula, and I won't get into the intricacies of the formula, but they say here's what you can borrow for a county your size based on your valuations, property valuations averaged over the last 5 years. And they say X percent, 70% or so is allowed for you to borrow. So I wanted to show you first the total of our outstanding bonded debt, and you can see how it's gone up from around $50 to $60 million. Coincidentally, the debt that's subject to the debt limit, this is a subclassification, that's the green line, and that just happens to be almost the same except for a couple of years. So there are always some exclusions that are backed out of the calculations for certain types of debt. So for all intents and purposes, the debt that's subject to our debt limit is pretty much the same as our outstanding bonded indebtedness. And then our debt as a percentage of the debt limit is something that Moody's looks at, and we report in our financial statements. And I think what Mike was asking for all along was this final figure here, this purple line down here, shows your debt as a percentage of the debt limit. In other words, out of that which we are allowed to debt by state law, how much have we actually become indebted by? And that number has pretty much consistently stayed around 11%. You can see it hasn't changed much, even in these last year as we've taken on more debt. So that's a pretty good and pretty consistent number, and something that reflects very favorably with Moody's and the rating agencies. 11.23% is our latest percentage of debt limit. General fund. When we talk about fund balance, which we talked about a lot in the last few meetings, and we'll talk a little bit more about it tonight, in order to create what adds to and takes from your fund balance each year, you add your revenues and you subtract your expenditures. When we show this graph, we include any transfers in to the general fund as a revenue source. Also for the expenditures, any transfers out to other funds are included as expenditures. So here our revenues are at $174 million. If we move across the top of the page, and somehow I'm not moving, but, and expenditures are $171 million. So our unassigned fund balance in 2020 came in at $47,997,000, or rounded up to $48 million. So you can see over here that in 2019 was our best year with revenues and expenditures correspondingly high. As you know, in 2020, we had some cutbacks. Won't go into detail on all of those. But even in spite of the pandemic and all the cutbacks and all the austere measures that were taken during the year, our fund balance hit here still, and this is the unassigned fund balance, not our total fund balance, still went up to where it now at $48 million. Another topic that we've talked a lot, almost too much, every month and every quarter, is the infamous sales tax report that you have come to know and love. And as a result, we built this graph that shows that 2020 came in at $34,270,000. That's this shorter graph right here. Just a little over $34 million. Now, you can see how we were almost at $39 million last year over here, and there was quite a cutback in sales tax, and that was something that was planned for. But again, we had at one time thought that we would be down as much as $11 million. And I think this is pretty good that we're only down about $4 million. Now, I made a projection here, and this is not to take the place of the formal projections that county administration will be sharing with you or has shared with you as you go into the budget process. This is just a kind of a rough estimate. And the way I've come up with this figure, I think I alluded to this last time we talked about it, was we simply took a picture in time of where we were right now, our actuals for 2020, and we added the same amounts for the last 6 months of the year that we got in 2019, i.e. a normal year. And if we get for the next 6 months roughly what we got for the last 6 months of 2019, we should be able to come in for this year, 2021, up here around $38 to $39 million. So, again, it doesn't take in a whole lot of other relevant factors or other reasoning behind it. It's just one of the things that I have to do, because in the next month I'll have to be estimating those tax credits that the municipalities get. That's part of the tax cap calculation. And one of the things that we have to do to estimate that is to go ahead and finalize what we think our projection is for 2020 so that we can make some more projections for 2021. Question?
Yeah, what's our budget for 2021 sales tax?
Our budget for 2021, it's a lot less than this. I don't have that in front of me right now.
Thirty-seven point seven,
says our deputy. He's never been wrong yet, so. At least that's what he tells me. Anyway, I know it's considerably less than this figure. I don't think it's as low as what we got in 2020, but it's certainly not as high as what I have projected here. So it probably is right around there, as Drew said. Might have even come up in another slide, but I'm not sure. Now we're going to come back to fund balance again. And talk about it a little bit more. Last year, you were able to. There we go. Last year, you were able to see this slide, and everybody was kind of open mouthed about what we had gained in fund balance over 7 years. Well, I just added one more year here. What we gained in 2020, we added another $1.8 million to our unassigned fund balance. And so these 8 years from 2013, here where it was only $1.5 million, each year we added, we never had a bad year. And every one of these years we budgeted to use fund balance. If you remember that every time you pass a budget, there's a component that says, well, we're going to use fund balance to spend, usually it's around $1 million or $2 million in that vicinity. And, but yet every year, even though we plan to use fund balance, we always manage to generate a surplus. So these are the additions. And you don't have to write this all down, because if you'd like a copy of the PowerPoint, I can send it to you after the meeting. And I think you'll like to have it just for a reference. But last year, 2019, that was an exceedingly good year at $4.8 million coming in, adding to our unassigned fund balance. So when you add up just over the 8 years of what we accrued in additional fund balance, and again, this is unassigned, it's $30 million over 8 years. And that all, by the way, is since I become finance director. I'm just kidding. I mean, that's,
you're not kidding.
I just report the numbers to you, and I'm just, you know, I couldn't resist. But, you know, I think this is a very important topic. Because, as you'll find out by the end of the presentation, I am not going to recommend what you should spend your fund balance on, and I will not recommend how much you should spend, but I will give you my concerns and my ideas on whether you spend too much or too little. And one of the slides as we're coming up to next talks quite a bit about what our fund balance level should be. Duplicated a slide from last year that said, and I believe Deborah brought this out the other night, that GFOA recommends, as well as our auditors too, that we have no less than 2 months of regular general fund operating revenues on hand that becomes part of your unassigned fund balance. That's 16.7% is what they recommend. Auditors are usually saying anywhere from 18 to 25%, but be that as it may, the GFOA recommends this to be a minimum, no less than. As you know, Jason and I, now Lisa and I, are working on a fund balance policy that will change the existing policy from 10% to something else. We almost got it done last year, and then something happened, I forget what it was, that kind of derailed us and focused our attention on other things. But we were about to recommend to you that our policy 0504 on fund balance changed two things. The comparison in our policy right now compares fund balance to budgeted revenues. Almost everybody across the board uses actual revenues at the end of the year. So a lot of the discussions that we had at meetings over time, we're looking at actual revenues because that's a more concrete number, it's a more realistic number. But our policy still says compare it to your budgeted revenues. So I've gone back and I've redrafted a lot of my notes on whatever I bring to the legislature is still going to be based on comparing our unassigned fund balance to budgeted revenues. And that means the modified budget at the end of the year. So if we're looking at 2020, I'm going to be showing you something that is the budget revenues for the general fund as of the end of 2020. Not the beginning, not your original budget, but at the end of the year. That takes into account all the resolutions that you have passed throughout the year and all the budget transfers and budget adjustments that are done throughout the year. And again, I would still stick with this recommendation. The 18 to 23% was a number. We came up with one number, and then we talked about the higher number. And then Jason and this just goes back to around October, November of last year, had both decided that we ought to make it a range. Why not make it a range of numbers? And then the only thing that's left to be done in this new policy for you to look at is what happens if you fall below or above the range. There should be tools in your toolkit that tells us or you what to do when you fall short. And that's not existing in the current policy. It doesn't tell you how to fix it. Nor does it say what to do if you exceed your fund balance policy. So we would like to add that to the policy itself. That would help you stay within this range, if indeed you agree with having a range. And I'm not saying it has to be these numbers, but I think a range in your fund balance policy makes a little bit more sense than just having one static number. Unassigned fund balance as a percentage of budgeted revenues. Let's get back to that word budgeted. This graph, and you got the sneak peek last night when I showed this to you, is that if you look at the last few years, these last 4 years, we pretty much stayed pretty much in line, right around 24%. Here we're closing in on 28%, and my gosh, that was 2020 during the pandemic. So the 27% figure that we were talking about early, Martha, with a lot of the calculations that were done in a lot of offline meetings, that was all based on actual revenues. And because actual revenues and budget revenues are different, I wanted to recalculate this so that we're comparing apples and apples. So this is the general fund, unassigned fund balance compared to budgeted revenues at the end of each year. And we're right there at 24.7. And interestingly, 1% of budgeted revenues right now is $194,711,722 is the budget revenue. So 1% is $1.9 million. So round that up to $2 million. For every 1%, it equals $2 million as we start adjusting and looking at changes in our fund balance.
You're saying $2
million. $2
million
equals
of budgeted revenue.
Right.
Right, okay.
So for every $2 million, that's, if we'd spend $2 million, that would bring it down 1%. So if you wanted to bring it down $10 million, what percent would that be?
Five.
All right. Everybody screamed, as mass scholars do, 5%. And I know that you've been kicking these numbers around. You can probably do, you probably have each done a number of calculations, but that's what this slide shows. If you boil it down to what is 1% in dollars, and that is roughly $2 million. Now I'm going to take, if Dominic is right, and I can stop sharing this screen just for a moment to share another one. Here we go. This is a screen after your discussion last night. I went home and I started to put pencil paper, and I came up with something that was a little like the chart I was trying to share with you yesterday, but it's laid out a little bit clearer. The year over here shows 19, which is our last normal year, 2020, which was not a normal year, and then our projection for 21 and 22. So our unassigned fund balance was these numbers here, 46.2, close to 48 million at 2020, and I kept it the same for the next 2 years because there's just no way to know how we're going to end this year. So just for sake of illustration, I kept it at this basically $48 million. Our amended budgeted revenues, these top two figures, $194 million, for each of these years, 2019 and 2020, come right out of the financial statements. So that's a fact. Then this year here, 2021, you'll see how much lower this 171 is compared to 194 for our general fund budget. That's after all budget transfers and budget adjustments had been met right up until today. I just took a snapshot today where we're at. And that is your budget of revenues in the general fund right now, at 171, closer to 172 million. Quite a bit less than the budget in 2020 and 2019. So, you know, you're talking, you know, $20 million plus.
Hi. What is that?
That's
a huge drop.
That is a large job, and that is how much the budget was dwindled down from during your budget process last year and some other budget adjustments that took place this year. Now, if you project out to next year, I didn't talk to Lisa about this, but I did share it with her. I just guess what your budget is going to be next year. I took 2019, our last normal year, and I increased it 3%. And I thought that was probably where you're going to end up, at $200 million. And it's a nice round number. So it's actually 3.05% on top of 2019's budget. I wanted to share this last number with you for next year at $200 million budget. Then the calculations, just like the slide before with the yellow bars, this shows you what our unassigned fund balance really is at the end of each of those years, 23.8, like the other slide, 24.7, like the other slide. Then this year, because the revenues are so much less as far as budgeted revenues, it goes up to 28%. Why does it go up? Because the denominator went down. And then when we get back to next year, a little bit more normal times, it comes in again now at 24%. These columns here tell you what your fund balance should be under each of three scenarios. Your fund balance should be under the current 10%. Our policy right now is just 10%. If it was 10% that you were trying to meet, in 2019, you should have $19.5 million. We have $46.2 million. In 2020, which is the year we're reporting on to you tonight, you should have $19.5 million. We have $48 million. If you go to next year's projection, or the current year that we're in right now, you should have $17 million. We got $48 million. And if you go to the projection for the end of 2022, you should have $20 million. It goes up, of course, because the budget has gone up, instead of $48 million. Now, this is a very low percent, and we don't think that it should be that low. We don't think that should even be our comparison or yardstick or barometer at this point. The range that we've been talking about is between these two columns, 18% and 23%. So if you went to the lower end of the range for our new policy, that would probably be 18%. You can see that it would be $35 million compared to $46 million. Still have more than 18%. Same thing is true for that year. Now, in this year, it gets closer. We're about $31 million with a $48 million unassigned fund balance. And then this year, it goes up to $36 million. And the last example is the high end of the range. If our fund balance policy allows you to keep 23%, you see in this first year, you're about $45 million. Unassigned fund balance was only 46, so you only have $1 million surplus there. $1 million over and above the recommended level at 23%. Here it's around $45 million versus the $48 million. And this is where Jason and I left off about a year ago, because our projections ended right here. That's why we were going to write a fund balance policy, bring it to you with a recommendation to immediately transfer $3 million to the capital project fund. Just because of this figure right here. Because we thought, well, to be very conservative, we'll keep 40. You know, we have 48. We'll keep 45. We'll transfer $3 million to the capital improvement fund, and they'll still have the 23%. Let me just finish one thing, and then we'll answer your question. Again, here at 23% for 2021, it goes to quite a big difference, from $39 million to $48 million. And this last year, it's from $46 million to $48 million. So that brings it down to just a $2 million difference, if you're looking at funding it at the full level of 23%. Now it's a good time for questions.
Okay, Deborah and then Martha.
Yeah, I guess the part that's confusing to some of us is why we would want to be so far above the 16.7%. I mean, I understand 18% is a nice round number. So are you saying that somehow or another you want that range because we don't ever want our fund balance to exceed the upper end of that range? And if that's the point of this, why?
When we first put it together, we thought that 18%, if it was just one number and not a range, was a perfect number, because it brought into context a lot of different views, our auditors, the GFOA, what other counties were doing, how enterprise funds are run, even though we're looking at the general fund, and just cash flow purposes. You know, it's good to have at least 18% so that there are cyclical cash flow movements within your fiscal year. For example, taxes come in all at once, and there's other months where we hardly make any money at all. So the cash flow is very uneven for the county. And so this takes into effect that you never have to do any short-term borrowings, you know, to to fund your general fund if you keep it at 18%.
Well, I understand the 18. It's the 23 that's making my head spin.
Well, that's because the numbers get big. But you have to remember, you're talking about a $200 million budget, too. Sometimes we think $5 million, $10 million, $15 million sounds like a really big number, and let's either squirrel it away or let's go out and spend it. But you have to look at the context that you're fast approaching now, a $200 million budget. And so every time that you're wanting to add or take a little bit out of fund balance, if your budget goes up $10 million in 1 year, we were just talking in the office before we came over here, that you have to take an effect if you're going to be increasing your budget by $10 million. You also have to fund the reserve, you know, by whatever it is percent that you pick. Say you pick 20%. 20% of $10 million, you still have to, you know, you still have to hit
$2 million
in addition to what you plan for as increases in your budget. Now, we've never been forced to do that in our calculations at budget time, mainly because we had all this surplus and all this excess. But if you ever were at a point to where you were below the level of what you should have, or even right at it, that every time you passed an additional $10 million in your budget, you should be bumping it up another $2 million to cover the reserve requirement. If this was being run like a water and sewer utility, every time you do or any other kind of utility, every time you do a rate increase, not only do you do a rate increase to take care of the operating costs and a portion of the capital costs, but also the reserve requirement that you have to meet for that utility. So we've never forced you to look at it that sharp, because it's never been it never necessitated that sharp an edge or question for you to handle. But that was our best guess on what would be conservative for the county going on, was the 18% number, if you had to pick a number.
Yeah, it's just that having a $10 million spread makes it difficult to figure out where we should be aiming to land, I guess.
And again, that's a policy decision, and I'm not going to make that for you. But you're somewhere between this range here, 36 and 46, is where you should end up being.
Okay, Martha, and then Rich John.
Why not 30%? I'm hearing 23 is pretty much. I mean, 18%, I understand, which is already 1.3 million more than the minimum. I can't think about these numbers without knowing opportunity cost. Sure, if we had all the money in the world, let's put more in the reserves. I don't hear any actual justification for going to 23. I hear why not. I hear conservative. I hear if your budget went up more than, but I think the residents of the county need a little bit more justification than why not. And especially if you're saying, I mean, to aim for that in one fell swoop, I really don't think a $46 million unassigned fund balance is an appropriate thing to do. It would be great to see this chart with 16.7%, for example, and also be interesting to know. So the amended budget revenue, amended budgeted revenue column, I see 2 years at $194 million. How consistent has that been going back farther than that? Because we know.
I don't think that. I could pretty readily generate those numbers for you. I don't have them right now at this moment, but usually they're not quite that close. You know, usually your budget goes up a couple million dollars every year. So I would think if you go back to 2018, 2017, 2016, you'll find budget figures that are $2-3 million less each year. Our budgets have tend to grown fairly linearly.
Yeah, that sort of rings true as a general
rule. Had to answer that before. But
I'd be interested. I really would be interested in including in that column what is 16.7%. If that's what GFOA says,
we can easily do that. We'll bring the policy back to you. We'll make a note that is definitely a number that you want to see. And we will also bring back two columns here. We're going to show you the amended budget revenue, and what we're recommending is to convert over to actual revenue at year end. The calculation is more meaningful, and what other counties do, I'd say 95% of the time, they either use actual revenue or actual expenditures. Every place I've ever worked before was actual expenditures. You can pick either one, but I've never seen where we were comparing to budgeted revenue. Usually you're doing this calculation at the close of the fiscal year when you're doing your audited financial statements, and you have the actual revenue, so why not use the actual revenue as the figure? And that's pretty much what most cities and counties do. So our recommendation would be to, and I can bring you both columns, I can bring you a column that shows amended budget revenue and actual revenue.
Well, what's the difference usually? Which one is more?
Well, like in this year that we just discussed in the slide I presented to you earlier this week, the actual budget revenue, this number turned into 27%. It was 27.4 instead of 24.7. Because the actual revenue was so much less.
Right. I know, 2020. We're just going to have to asterisk 2020 on every column.
And I didn't want to throw that. I thought I'd be throwing too much at you if I gave you too many columns.
I'd love to see, that's fine. Anyway, and last year when we did have an initial conversation at BCP about the policy, and as I remember then, there also was no actual reason given for 23. I do think it's, that obviously doesn't mean that we can only, do this one thing or another. That's what the target is. So,
But you would agree that it needs to come up from 10% to something else. Because that 10% is just not adequate.
I'd say 16 to 18 might be, if you want a range, I'd go 16 to 18.
I could live with 16 to 18.
Okay. Rich John and then Mike Sigler.
I had a couple things I was hoping to ask. Is there a threshold where it starts to impact our bond rating?
Hard to say because, again, Moody's will never tell us what scope this actual fund balance number has, along with the other 23 factors that they use to give us our bond rating. We don't know the weighting, and we don't know how important that number is.
Can we assume that it's at least that 2 months of revenue?
Yes.
Okay. Which,
in fact, if you look at other counties with our rating, they are almost all, I can say 90% of them are all higher than where we're at 23 and 24%.
Okay.
They're at 30, 35%.
And simple math, if you're saying 2 months, it's 1/6 of the 200, so it'd be $33.3 million, roughly. Yeah. What I'm seeing is that because of what we're doing with revenue replacement and allocation to capital program, we are going to save money in our capital plan, and so structurally, we will be adding to our fund balance probably at a greater rate than we have on that slide you showed us over the last several years, which I think is encouraging. But I also wanted to respond to Martha's comment about why 23% and the public needs some justification for that. And certainly we don't want to sit on too much money, but at the same time, I think we have a wonderful example that we just went through a tremendous crisis, and governments all over our country struggled in ways that we were able to respond to. I give one example where the hospital was asking for reimbursement of expenditure that they had made that they had to wait for FEMA to pay, and we had the money. We did not lack for any resource in responding to the pandemic because we had our fund balance where it was at. We were prepared financially for that crisis, and that was well more than 18%. Now, would the 18% be enough if we have another rainy day like we had, a storm? Perhaps, and that's the decision we have to make, but I was not upset that we had a large fund balance when when we needed it, and we did. While I am firmly in favor of us adopting a program to do extra one-time project funding out of our fund balance in balance to what we've done with taking the ARPA money, I don't feel we have to spend the money and have to spend it right away, that we should do it in a judicious way. And we should also be thinking that we may not be done with the pandemic, that we may see a recurrence, given what's happening, it seems, on a rolling basis right now. We should be careful. With that said, I think we should set a number target that over a course of years we would reduce our fund balance down, but contemplating that because of our capital program savings, we will be structurally adding to our fund balance too. So I think we can manage both. Thanks.
Thank you, Rich. Very good points. Mike Sigler?
Rich asked my question. Thank you.
Okay. Mike Lane?
Yeah, I thought Rich spoke very well what he just said. I would just apply the term stability to the size of our fund balance, and I don't see a problem with the 18% to 23%. We're going to get something more in the future, whether it's another pandemic or whether it's a flood or whether it's an ice storm, which will do a whole lot of expensive damage to our county. And that's going to happen in the future. Let's be there and be able to react to it without panicking our population as to what they're going to have to pay in taxes at that time compared to what they need to spend on their own families and their own properties to recover from whatever happens. And I can't tell you for sure what's going to happen, but it's going to happen.
A little ray of sunshine.
Sorry.
Thank you, Mike. Dan Klein?
Well, we're not actually discussing this policy, but we seem to be discussing this policy, so I thought I'd throw in my two cents very quickly, which is we're looking at these numbers, I would like to think of it as more of a rolling average than a year. We're down $2 million this year in the fund balance, therefore we need to replenish $2 million. I think that's a bad idea. That's going to make really drastic changes. But if we looked at the rolling five-year average, just as an example, and with the plan that it's going to take us 5 years to correct, if we're trying to do it every year, I think that's a bad idea. We should feel confident to let the fund balance grow a little bit. We should feel confident spending it down a little bit, as long as there's a plan to bring it back the other way sometime in the near future.
Yeah, those are the tools I was saying was not in the existing policy that we sorely need.
Okay.
You're exactly right. Great. You know, whether it's a rolling average or however it is that the legislature would like to amend the policy so that it gives direction to yourself, really, and county administration on what to do when you exceed or fall short of the goal, whether it's a number or a range. That's what's missing from the policy. So that idea is, you hit it on the head.
Thank you, Dan. I have Henry and then Dave.
Yes, Rick. The first slide you showed us was that over 8 years, our fund balance has gone up about $30 million. Has our bond rating changed during that time?
No.
So, in fact, when we had fund balances that were lower than 18 or 23%, we still had the same bond rating.
As far as I know, I mean, it hasn't changed since I've been here. I only went back 8 years, but I think we were at that bond rating for a good number of years before 2013. So I know that that bond rating, there's only one other higher level that's available, and no New York State counties have attained that. And so sometimes it's almost a pie-in-the-sky approach to think or hope that you might somehow get that highest ratings when it really just doesn't, for all, you know, practical purposes, it really doesn't exist within the reach of most New York State counties.
Thanks.
Dave McKenna, and then Martha.
Yeah, I'm in favor of the 18-23%. I like having a range, and I would suggest that we work within that range, spend it down a little bit, bring bullet back up, and do that kind of thing. As Mike said, there's always going to be something coming up. We don't know what it is. We don't know how much it's going to cost. But if we get caught with an empty wallet, we're in trouble. And the county's in trouble. We weathered this storm very well. I'd like to see us be able to do that in future storms.
Thank you, Dave. Martha, and then Amanda.
Yeah, just quickly, that I think you've said about getting to any higher bond rating in New York State, it's a structural impossibility because of unfunded state mandates that we don't have any control over. So I think I remember you saying that.
And demographics, you know, income per household and the total size of the population, things like that. You know, you really have no control over population.
Right. And the bond rating, I think you've said, is sensitive to do we have a plan, not whether it's high because we're not spending, but it's high because we have a plan and we're following a plan.
We have expressed that to Moody's, and they have confirmed that if you came up with a good, and this was before the pandemic, if you had a good pay-as-you-go program or cash-for-capital program, and you were going to spend so much out of fund balance, and that they could see that this was a well-devised, structured capital plan spread out over a considerable number of years, and that was going to be a use of fund balance, that was be easily recognizable in any document, so that they can show with fact how much fund balance you use. What they don't want to see is where a lot of smaller towns and villages and small counties, that they rely on fund balance just to patch their operating budget each year, and then that's using fund balance for what we call continuing costs that you shouldn't be funding it other ways. And unfortunately, they don't have much choice. I'm not saying that's a bad thing for towns or villages to do, but you shouldn't be using your fund balance for ongoing operating costs, because that runs out real soon. And, you know, I'm afraid, not for this county, but I mean just nationwide, that with all this extra spending that's going on with ARPA money and stuff, that people could be spending it unwisely and building programs and building projects and things that they know are going to be ongoing, but they're using this one-time money to put into programs that are long-term, and that's what we ought not do. You know, but if we put a structured plan in place, and I think this has been the guidance that the legislature's followed for a long, long time. Whenever you adopt a budget and you use reserves or one-time funding, it's usually for, you know, a capital cost or a one-time need, a one-time project. And you've been fairly disciplined in doing that over many, many years. I encourage you to still keep that in mind.
Thank you.
I still have a few other slides, so if we can get out of this. Is there anything else on this topic?
Amanda has a question, and then if we could try and wrap this up. We do have some other things on the agenda this evening.
No, I was going to say
Amanda has
that
not
we
spoken.
Are not actually voting on this tonight, and we will get to have this discussion numerous more times.
Again and again.
So I was going to ask Rick to move forward with his presentation.
I stop sharing that one, and I'll go back to the original slide here. Okay. This next chart shows the fund balance. We've concentrated just on the general fund. And here we're looking at the total fund balance, not the unassigned. But you can see 2019 to 2020 went up from $54 to $57.4 million just in the general fund, up $3.1 million. All these are total fund balance figures. And I like this right from the auditor's report because it showed all the other funds. When we come up with a policy, we're going to address all the major funds in that policy. Not that your policy is not going to be just for the general fund, but for all these other smaller funds. We have a county road fund, the airport fund, the recycling materials management fund, still they call solid waste, et cetera, et cetera, debt service fund. So we'll have a policy statement for each of the major funds, and I wanted you to see this table. When you roll them all up, we went from $63.5 million to $72.9 million, an increase of $9.3 million in total fund balances across all funds. Not bad. This is the road fund, and the balance at the end of the year, the fund balance at the end of the year was $1.2 million. That's this green bar. You'll see the revenues and expenditures did go down in 2020 compared to the previous year, but it doesn't look all that too far off the charts when you consider 2020 being a COVID year. But ironically, again, fund balance in the road fund or the D fund went up to $1.2 million. Airport is the next slide. The revenues that came in, well, first of all, the fund balance, I thought you should see, even that went up to about $1.5 million. Just looking at the operating revenues, they were $3.9 million. That was far in excess of 2018-2019. And our expenditures for the airport were $3.7 million. That's the blue bar. They went up considerably over a three-year period. It's the highest year for 3 years. So how could the revenues be so high when we were thinking that the airport wasn't even open a long part of the time? Well, part of this $3.9 million is a huge federal grant that we got, and that if you pulled that out of there, this would have been way down here. So a lot of the revenue funding was part of the CARES Act funding and other federal funds that the airport got that a lot of other departments weren't fortunate to get. But as a result of that, the fund balance went up. And I think the last slide was the solid waste fund or recycling and materials management. Revenues were $6.2 million. Expenditures were $5.8. Not much of a difference compared to previous years, very much at all. They were fortunate to see their unassigned fund balance at the end of 20 go up to $2.4 million. So, again, you'd hardly know of the crisis if you were just looking at our solid waste fund. If you talk to Barb Expert, though, she'll tell you completely different because she always had 14 things that went wrong and things that we need to fix next year and why we need a rate increase, et cetera, et cetera. You'll be hearing a whole lot more when you get into the budget cycle on solid waste. And I do agree, going forward, they have some tough, tough decisions to make in the solid waste fund going forward. But this is just a picture in time. As of the end of 2020, still sitting pretty good with this kind of fund balance. And that is all we have for you. Thank you for your attention and helping us get through it.
Great. Thank you, Rick. I am certainly glad that we did not take action last night because I think the information you provided today gives us a very clear picture of what we can feel good doing about and the direction that we should take in future conversations. So thank you for coming out tonight and giving us the presentation. Any other questions for Rick? I see none. Oh, Rich?
I just say thank you for all the work you did on that. That was really helpful.
And we're back on track to where we were 2 years ago. Remember last year we were doing this second meeting in September, I believe it was, and we're back to the second meeting in July, which is exactly where we were the year before.
Good news. We do have a resolution, Resolution F, acceptance of audited financial report for the fiscal year ended December 31st, 2020. And Deborah Dawson, Chair of Budget.
Yeah, I'd like to move that resolution, okay. Acceptance of audited financial report for the fiscal year ended December 31st, 2020, ID 10199.
And Dave McKenna would like to second that. Are there any questions on this resolution? I see none. All those in favor? That's unanimous. Thank you very much, Rick, again for coming in. Next, we have a report by the county administrator, Lisa Holmes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a few quick updates to report on. We are not having our COVID update tonight as usual. We've gone to once a month, but I'll just hit on a few highlights there. Our most recent COVID vaccination rates in the county, the 75.9% of the 18 plus population have received at least one dose of the vaccine. 68.3% of the total Tompkins County population has received at least one dose of the vaccine, and 66,589 Tompkins County residents are fully vaccinated. The current COVID caseload will be out tomorrow from the health department, but we know that it's been relatively and local pharmacies and healthcare providers have vaccines available, and we're referring people to, again, to the county health department website or calling 211. Free testing is still available for county residents at the shops at Ithaca Mall through Cayuga Health Systems. They're open Monday through Friday from 8:30 to 4 p.m., and they residents can register at the CayugaHealthSystems.org website. In county administration, we are in the midst of holding budget meetings with county departments and supported agencies through the end of July. That's the typical process, back-to-back-to-back meetings all month. And then on the reimagining public safety front, the two positions to establish the Community Justice Center have been posted, and applications are due by August 15th for those positions. They are up on the Human Resources website for the county, and we encourage any candidates who may be interested and have a demonstrated commitment to equity and social justice to apply. And I think that's it for me.
Thank you, Lisa. Any questions for Lisa? Henry?
Yes, I know that last meeting Frank Cooper talked about the Delta variant and there was a delay. Do you have any updates on how prevalent the Delta variant is in Tompkins County?
I do believe that Frank is with us. I don't know if he's available for comment on the Delta variant.
If Frank is unavailable, I can say we haven't received that further report yet that I'm aware of at the EOC. The health department might have it, and then we have a check-in with them tomorrow morning at 8:30, so I can ask in our weekly. Oh, there's Frank. There's a filler for you, Frank.
Oh. He's doing the chipmunk.
Hey, Frank, we can't hear you. Can we get Frank a new computer? Hi, Frank. I also have been sending legislators the weekly report from Dr. Klapak that I think should answer a lot of your questions. Welcome back, Frank.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
All right. Sorry about that. And all that to say, I don't really have an update yet from Cornell on the latest related to variants. Our case numbers are very, very low. I think right now we have 4 active cases in the county. So really any information is not really going to be trendable. It's clear that we are predominantly seeing variants. The B117, which I don't know what Greek letter that is, but it was the original UK variant, has been our predominant strain and I believe continues to be. What we're seeing is travel-related cases. So most of the cases that we're seeing are related to people having traveled recently and or household contacts of those individuals.
Thank you, Frank. Any other questions for Lisa or Frank? I see none. Thank you. Next on our report is County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
Hi. I did want to give everybody a little update on the opioid lawsuits, et cetera, because I'm sure you've been reading something about it, and I've had several questions. So there are a couple of different things going on. There, I'm sure you've heard, and I've gotten some questions about the Purdue bankruptcy. The major question is, do we get money out of that? And the answer is yes. We have filed a claim in that, and we've given them our taxpayer ID, which is everything they need to pay us as soon as they know when and how much to pay us. How much we will get out of that is wildly unknown. How much anybody will get out of it is wildly unknown. The number that they start with is unknown, never mind the distribution, but we are a claimant in the bankruptcy and we expect to get something out of it when the money is gathered and distributed.
John, what bankruptcy are you talking about?
That's Purdue. Purdue Pharma, which is the manufacturer of OxyContin. It's actually the big manufacturer in the whole group. And I always thought it was likely to go bankrupt as opposed to some of the others because it's not a big, large, publicly traded company. It's more closely held. So I always thought it more likely that it would go bankrupt than some of the bigger companies like Johnson & Johnson, which I thought, and it turns out it's more likely to do settlements. So, you know, the Purdue bankruptcy is, you know, probably as big a player as there is in the field. And, you know, but how much money will come out of it and how much money will end up at the county is unclear. But we do have our claim in and we will get some distribution when that is done. You've also heard, I'm sure, about the potential settlement in opioid lawsuits, which involves 4 entities, Johnson & Johnson and 3 distributors. Johnson & Johnson is a manufacturer and the other companies are distributors. Johnson & Johnson also, by the way, is really makes components of others of drugs from other companies. So it's not just products marketed as Johnson & Johnson. It's products marketed by other drug companies as well. But in any event, you know, I've reported in the past about some of these settlements and say they're not real or don't count on anything. This one is real. We do expect there to be a settlement in the next few days. You know, the number people are talking about is the $26 billion range. How much the county will get, again, is very unclear. What the process is going to be is municipalities will get to determine whether they want to participate or not in the settlement. Our lawyers are recommending that we participate in the settlement. My understanding is that there's going to be 5 months for municipalities to decide whether they're in or not. So certainly nothing's going to happen in for 5 months in terms of payments. And the more municipalities participate, the more each municipality that participates would get. That's sort of counterintuitive. But if you look at it that the more participate, it means that there are fewer out there that can sue outside of the settlement. So the more municipalities like counties that participate, the more money each municipality will get. But having, you know, have, while we have a general idea of what the settlement is, we really have no idea of how many municipalities are going to participate in it. Hopefully most municipalities will. And then how it will be distributed, both between the states and the municipalities. That's not really, determined that it's going to be different in different states. So, you know, there's still much to be decided, but I think the steps that have gone are all positive. You know, we said from the very beginning, this is going to be a long-term thing. It's not something we're going to get money on overnight. But it does look like, you know, we have settlements and bankruptcies of some of the major players, and which will lead to eventually the county getting money. As some of you probably have heard, the state has adopted a law which is going to limit the use of that, but that's, you know, still somewhat unclear in terms of just how limited the use will be. I mean, it's supposed to be for things related to the to the problems caused by opioids and not just for any purpose. But again, the numbers are unknown, but at least we're moving in the right direction. That's my report. Be happy to answer any questions. I'm not sure I could tell a lot more than I've said.
Thanks, Jonathan. We have a question from Mike Sigler.
Hi, John. I have two questions, actually. I guess my first is, what counts as a municipality? Like, is this something, I mean, Lansing, Village of Lansing, Village of Cayuga Heights, I mean, are these all count as municipalities so that we should kind of garner everything in the county to apply for this?
Yeah, I believe that every municipality, I think a municipality is pretty much everything that is not a state, as I understand it. But, you know, I'm not sure what notices different, you know, like villages and towns are going, because most of the entities that have been suing are cities and counties and states. You know, not that, you know, I'm sure there are some towns and villages, et cetera. But the settlement, I believe, is to cover all entities, even those that haven't sued. But I'm not really sure how, because for parties like us who are already involved, how we get notice is pretty simple. I'm not sure how the notice is going to go to entities that are not involved.
Well, that was my second question, actually. So if you weren't involved from the jump, you can still be involved. I mean, it sounds like from what you just said, you know, the Village of Lansing could say, hey, we want part of this now, and they could actually join and maybe get part of the settlement.
Right.
That sounds about right?
That
I
sounds.
I just mentioned Village of Lansing because they have a big treatment center, you know.
And again, the formula for what each one recovers is complex, and there will be many municipalities that are going to be contacted that haven't been involved in litigation, and many that have.
That's shaking her head, so I may have misspoke, so I'll turn it over to Deb.
Well, no, I just think that it's likely that the reason that it's cities, counties, and states is because those are the governmental units that have actually borne the expense of the opioid crisis, whereas local towns and villages are less involved in that. And that that treatment center is not a village facility, so nice try.
What they want to do, but it sounds like you could.
So. Yeah, I think it's just a question of what would your damages be? Henry?
I said, there is a pretty complex formula that they've developed for, which I don't think anybody fully understands, for determining what the damages are of various entities based on a whole bunch of different factors. And yeah, Deb, you're right that, you know, certain municipalities probably wouldn't have a lot, because I think, you know, things like population and death rates and all kinds of how much Narcan was used, all kinds of things are figured into this formula that they've been developing over the years while this is going on. Because the issue is really has been between very much between, you know, municipalities and states. Well, how, assuming we do have settlements, how do we divide up the money and trying to figure out a fair way to do that? And yeah, I mean, how villages and towns would figure in to that formula, I think is really tough, but probably wouldn't get a whole lot based on the things that they're talking about would go into the formula.
Thank you. Henry?
Yes, Jonathan, I want to move on to another topic. What's the status of the open meetings law with all the advisory boards and committees that we have?
Sure. We actually had a meeting with the all the department heads to discuss that. But so by way of just sort of background, so the open meetings law requires open meetings of public bodies, or if you are a public body. And it raises the question of, well, what exactly is a public body? So some of the advisory boards, as some of you may know, are liking and have been satisfied with the Zoom type meeting and want to know if they could continue to do that as opposed to going back to what they were doing before, which was basically meetings where everybody met in person and were open and were open to the public. So the question of whether they can go back, whether they have to go back to having their open meetings open to the public, whether they could continue on a Zoom format like some of them would like to do, depends on whether they are public bodies under the law. And so to kind of give a brief little background, like, so the county legislature and all its subcommittees are clearly public bodies. And under the law, committees that are 100% purely advisory have no real decision-making power, are not public bodies. So, and then there's something in between, which it raises certain questions as to, you know, because we have a list of 50 advisory boards or about that. Some of them are just purely advisory and clearly not subject to the open meetings law, like Landfill Advisory Committee, for example. But others, like, say, the Board of Health, clearly are subject to the open meetings law. And what it largely depends on is whether they have any real powers, what the law says, exercise government functions, but whatever that means. But the real question is, do they have any real decision-making power, or are they purely advisory? And for that, you have to look and, you know, are they established by state law? Are they established by the county charter? What does it say? Do they have real powers, or do they just make recommendations? And so for many of our advisory committees, the answer is very clear. For others, it's a little less clear. And I've told, you know, the department heads, if there's questions, you know, obviously look at the enabling legislation, whether it's by state law or by the county charter or resolution. And if there's any question, get to me and we'll talk about it. And a few department heads have done that already. We will have to decide essentially committee by committee. But for most of them, it's fairly straightforward. For some of them, it's a little more complicated.
I know that there's also a move afoot in the legislature to change open meeting law. Any update on that?
I don't. I mean, you know, the open meetings law is really out of date and made sense in the 50s, but it should really be much broader now, allow for much more, you know, participation in ways that other than meeting in person and everybody being there. And it really hasn't caught up. And maybe Zoom, you know, this past pandemic will be a positive thing, and it'll give a push to the state legislature to have more reasonable rules. And, yeah, there are a couple of proposals out there to change it and bring it up to date, and I hope that they pass.
Thank you.
Jonathan, I think there's been some question and perhaps some confusion about legislators if they are unable to physically come to a meeting and they tune in via Zoom. Can you talk a little bit about what the expectation is or what they're able to do? If they're able to vote, are they counted as the quorum?
Sure.
And their participation?
Yeah. And again, this is one thing which is not absolutely clear, but let me kind of put out the rules. So members of the public body, which, for example, on the legislature includes the elected legislators. It does not include staff or anybody else. It basically just includes the elected members of the legislature. So it applies to members of the public body. Members of the public body need to attend in person. The only time a member of a public body cannot attend with the others in person is if they are at a spot which
I think you froze for a moment there. If you could repeat that.
Sure. Okay. The only time that a legislator or member of the public body does not have to be present, you know, while participating in the meeting is if the area, if they're in a different location that the notice of the hearing or of the meeting goes out, giving the public notice of that, and that the public can go to that space and that that space is appropriate for the public. We've never done that, and I would never advise doing that because, you know, we don't want to get into, you know, a legislator's house, people going there and that, you know, and us saying that that's an appropriate place for a county meeting and giving notice and that kind of stuff. So if you cannot attend in person, okay, then what the law says is that you cannot participate. What that means is what's open to some question. So Robert Freeman, who used to be the guru, said, well, it certainly means that you can't be counted as a quorum, as a member of a quorum, and you cannot vote. Okay? So that's clear. And I think also clear is if you just watch, you're just a member of the public, and that's fine, too. It's when it falls someplace in between that it becomes a little bit of a unclear area. Because, you know, Robert Freeman has said, and people have sort of assumed that if you don't vote, and you're not counted as a quorum, you're okay. But the word in the law says participate. So, you know, and I don't know any court has interpreted what participate means. So the recommendation that we have and what we put out when Lisa and I originally did that thing is that, you know, that if you can't attend in person, you can listen in. You obviously you cannot vote. You can't be counted as a quorum. And we certainly recommend you keep participation to a minimum because, you know, if the law does say participate. And, you know, I could see if you play a large role, even if you didn't vote and even if you weren't counted as a quorum, that someone challenging the action could point to the law and say, well, that person really participated. So again, it's a little bit of a gray area. Certainly you can't vote. Certainly you can't be counted as a quorum, but I would encourage people who are doing participating remotely to participate as little as possible, you know, contribute, obviously listen, take notes. But you know, the wiser policy is to participate as little as possible.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Jonathan? I see none. Thank you, Jonathan, for clarifying those questions.
Sure.
Next, we have Director of Finance. Rick, you want to go for round two?
Just real quick, okay. We'll be having an auction this year, and we got thumbs up
doing that. This will be 2 years of properties rolled into one. Of course, we only have about 3 or 4 left over from last year. Did real well in collecting from property owners. Some of that was on the plus side due to COVID. They had more time to pay. In fact, we're still taking payments up till September 15th. The auction will be late this year. It will be held in October. And the last day for property owners to pay for this foreclosure auction is September 15th. And we'll be doing the auction tour with members of staff, planning department, assessment department, where we go out to each property owner. That'll be on August 30th. And at the GO committee coming up on the 5th of August, Darby Kiley will be presenting her annual memo that says these are the properties that we recommend pulling from the auction. So you'll be seeing that from Darby that first week in August. And that's all I have for tonight. I'll be taking vacation starting on Friday. Looking forward to it. And we'll be back on August 2nd. See you then.
Sounds good. Thank you, Rick. Henry?
Rick, do you happen to have any of the sales tax information?
I do not, but we'll have them. I was going to say the next meeting, but which is canceled, so I'll probably put them out by email and then bring it to you when we next meet again. I do know that all the counties have got an astounding month of June, an astounding quarter. I look quickly at the receipts, not having time to do the full distribution report. It looks like we're up 55%.
Wow. From last year.
Wow.
Martha?
Casino revenue? I mean, I don't want to be greedy, but...
I haven't got it yet, but it's due in any day now. We should be getting them by... We usually get it in July, and July is almost over. So casino revenue will be in the next month's meeting report also.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions for Rick? Okay, I see none. Why don't we take a 10-minute break? It is 7:41 right now. Let's meet back at 7:50. Welcome back after a nice little break. And we do not have any reports from other county staff today. Resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda. Henry, do you have a resolution?
Yes, I have a... resolution for an authorization to accept funds, execute contract, create positions, and budget adjustment, COVID-19 school grant, health department. It's resolution number 10275.
Thank you. Can I have a seconder? Seconded by Deborah. And this is to add this to our agenda this evening. So we will need 10 votes. All those in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That is 11 votes. Thank you all. Oh, did I miscount? Maybe I didn't count myself. We're at 12.
Rich came late.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
Did I have some fuzzy math? Oh, boy. I hope we keep our electricity.
Pardon me. Do we know if that's electricity or is there something with the lights?
No, it's a storm going through.
You think it's a storm related?
Yeah, Kathy's computer was flickering earlier.
Okay. So. I'm plugging my phone again.
Get the candles out. Okay, let's move on to consent agenda. The resolutions and appointments to be voted on as a group, unless any member of the legislature requests that a resolution or appointment be instead included separately and individually as part of the business of standing or special committees. We do have an appointment this evening to from the Public Safety Committee, Stop DWI and Traffic Safety Board, Christina Dravis, at-large representative. Her term expires December 31st, 2023. Tom Lipa, at-large representative. His term expires December 31st, 2024. And for our consent agenda, Resolution A, 2021 budget adjustment for Decree's Safe Harbor Grant Award, ID 10249. Resolution B, budget adjustment COVID-19 Vaccine Access Program, Office for the Aging, ID 10239. Resolution C, urging New York State to complete and settle prior year's enhancement federal Medicaid assistance program, reconciliation, and compensate Tompkins County according to federal requirements, ID 10245. Can I have a mover for the consent and the advisory board appointments? Moved by Ann, seconded by Glenn Morey. And are there any questions or comments? I see none. All those in favor, please raise your hand. That is unanimous with 12 votes. Thank you all. Now, if we can move on to standing and special committees. Downtown Facility Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Downtown Facilities did not meet this month. However, we will be meeting in August, and there has been a request to change the schedule of the meeting so that resolutions can make the next ledge meeting. So that means that it will be either on the 9th or the 10th. There's a doodle poll out asking members of the committee to sign up for times that they're available. So we need to do that. Other than that, that's my report.
Thank you, Dave. Are there any questions for Dave McKenna? I see none. Thank you. Public Safety Committee, Chair Rich John.
Thank you, Shauna. The Public Safety Committee met on July 15th, and we had a good report regarding the reimagining public safety. Lisa has already indicated that we're moving forward with posting the positions for the staff of the Community Justice Center. Other items we talked about at the meeting, we had our first visit with our new director from the Department of Emergency Response, Michael Stitley. And I have one resolution I'd like to put on the table, and I note that this is an authorization for a public hearing. I anticipate this will be a highly debated topic when we get to the actual local law, but this is just to set the public hearing. So I would move authorizing a public hearing on local law blank, a local law adopting a youth deer hunting pilot program, ID 10207.
And that's seconded by Glenn Morey. And any discussion on this? Again, this is just to establish a public hearing. We are not voting on allowing deer hunting in this resolution for 12 and 13-year-olds. So I see no questions or comments. Let's vote. All those in favor? That's unanimous. Thank you.
I only had one other thing just to report, that our jail numbers appear to be up a little bit. I'm not quite sure why, but we're at 46 and 6 board outs, which is higher than we've had in probably some time in the pandemic. Not sure what the reason for that is, but it does seem to be an uptick.
Thank you, Rich. Any questions for Chair Rich John? I see none. Thank you. Health and Human Services Committee, Henry Granison, Vice Chair.
Yes, we had a special meeting today at 4:30 in which we passed two resolutions that were on the consent agenda. And also we have a third resolution that we just approved, just put on the agenda tonight. And that is it, really, because we canceled our regular scheduled meeting to have the special meeting today.
Okay. And then we can do the resolution at the end for a member filed. Is that
okay,
all right, Henry?
Sure.
Okay. Any questions for Henry? Amanda?
I don't think it's a member filed. It came out of committee, right, Kathy?
Correct.
So
you could do the resolution now.
Oh, okay. I thought sure. Since we didn't give the 7 days notice that we had to do it as a member filed.
No.
Oh, my bad.
Okay. No, it was added to the agenda, so it can be.
Great. Okay, go for it, Henry.
Okay. This is, again, authorization to accept funds, execute contract, creation of positions, budget adjustment, COVID-19 school grant, health department, ID number 10275.
Would anyone like to second that? Seconded by Amanda. And Frank Krupa is here. Would you like to talk to the resolution, Frank?
Sure. Can you hear me this time? Okay, great. We've received federal funds through New York State, just shy of $2.6 million, and New York State is targeting that for testing in pre-K through 12. We have been working with our local school districts and have a three-pronged approach that we're going to take, all of which will be subcontracted through TST BOCES, who will then work with the districts to get the resources to them. There's the three components. The first is for symptomatic children. It would provide testing at their school prior to going home if they were to arrive symptomatic or become symptomatic during the day, in an effort to remove any barriers that families might have to get to testing. The second component is asymptomatic surveillance testing that districts would be able to opt into if they so chose. And the third piece would be to stand up a telemedicine pilot program. The focus of the telemedicine would be the appropriateness and necessity of doing COVID testing, but we're hoping that it's something that we'll be able to establish and grow to include telemedicine opportunities within our local schools. All of that would be subcontracted through TST BOCES to implement. This does include private schools and so we have been communicating with them as well. We are keeping a little bit of the money at the health department for the two positions that we're asking for, community health workers, to help get information out to families in the pre-K through 12 schools about testing, about COVID, and really support the districts in their efforts to keep children in person for the next school year.
Frank, are there any questions, Henry?
Also, this was passed by the Budget Committee in the special meeting yesterday, too.
Thank you. Any questions for Frank or Henry? I see none. Let's vote. All those in favor? That is unanimous. Thank you, Frank.
Henry, did you have anything else to report for us?
Nothing else to report.
Thank you. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Michael Lane, Chair.
Thank you. We've actually had two meetings since our last legislature meeting. We had a brief special meeting, which was handled in an executive session respect to a particular person, one of our employees. It was a discussion and no action was taken. Following that, we went into our regular meeting on July 15th. Quite a busy meeting. County Administrator Lisa Holmes brought to us the PAR forms for the various capital projects that she's going to be talking about for the budget process. And I don't know whether you want to make any comments about those, Lisa, other than the fact that we got a chance to look at them. There were, what, 41? 41 of them. So there goes the money, folks. We appreciated her hand bringing those to us. From facilities, we learned about the transformer project after the lightning strike hit the courthouse. That project's going to run, Arella Lamaro told us, just under $300,000. But the good news is our insurance is going to pay for all of it, I think. So we appreciated learning that and all the work that went into this project, keeping that building going electrically. We began discussion about one of our goals, which is to look at our water bottle filling capacity in the county buildings. We heard from Alan Lockett, and Amanda Champion came in and reported from her committee. And Amanda, remind me, it's the EEP committee?
EPP, Environmentally Preferred Procurement.
Okay.
Product Procurement. There's a lot of P's.
The whole purpose is to look at how we can reduce the use of single-use plastic bottles and by having the capacity for employees and staff to be able to fill water bottles if they want them, reusable ones from the water fountains and other ways in the in the county. So we'll be bringing back more information on that. But I thought that's an interesting discussion, and it'll be there'll be more to that. In the Highway Department, Jeff Smith told us that they're ready to go to construction bids for the Pine Tree Road project. That's a lot of safety improvements at the intersection out there. Airport, Mike Hall reported to us that we'll soon be looking at trying to revitalize the food service out there. We may be talking to a different or going out for a different vendor. The problem the airport terminal has is there's food on two sides of the entry into where the airplanes are, and it's very difficult to keep going. Right now, they've had to add some vending machines, higher-end vending machines, sandwiches and that kind of thing. But we're trying to, as the air traffic increases, we'll be trying to see if we can get food service back to what was anticipated when the airport terminal was designed. We also, there'll be another grant coming in. The grant, we hope to have another grant coming in through the airport revitalization project, upstate. There was about $200 million, of which we got $14 million, a couple of years ago. It helped us with our terminal. The second round is about $250 million at the state level. And we are, the committee authorized or gave its blessing to the continuation of the grant application for additional money, which would be used a lot for the things like the green initiative of our airport. Well, as you know, our airport was one of the first green airports in the country, and we have things like solar panels to be yet to be placed over parking. We have electric charging stations and other things like that to be put in, and so that's part of what the application is going to be for the airport. I wanted to say one other thing for the airport, and I was actually in the Mike Hall reported on it, but it was actually also in the Ithaca Times that talked about, for the second year in a row, our FAA inspection of our airport showed absolutely no problems that have to be written up.
And, pause you for a second.
Yep. Mike?
There's an emergency alert right now. I don't know what that is.
There's what?
It's weather.
It's weather, yeah.
I get that. But hey, there's a tornado coming, and you should be prepared. I mean,
has anybody looked at it?
I have not, which is why I'm asking, and that's why I paused Michael. So we always assume that it's nothing, kind of like a fire alarm, but every once in a while.
We're on the second floor.
Fair enough, but just saying.
There were really bad floods on the other side of Seneca Lake Saturday.
So sorry, Michael, I didn't mean to break your stride, but
I'm not getting an alert.
It's one of those things.
We'll look into it.
Thanks.
Okay, so what I want to talk about was the FAA inspection. For the second year in a row, we had no write-ups. Usually they come through and there's a punch list of problems from the lighting to the striping to the buildings to all kinds of things, and we've had none. And I think that is a reflection on the kind of excellent administration we have at the airport, not only Mike Hall, but Josh Naley and Roxanne Noble and all the folks that work with them to make our airport one of the most impressive small airports in New York State. And if you haven't been up there recently, there's the sign up now, which is the Ithaca Tompkins International Airport. So I guess I've talked long enough, but that's pretty much what we did.
Thank you, Mike. Are there any questions? Henry?
Yes. Mike, you said that the food situation, I thought that it was intended to be built.
Includes what?
I thought you talked about the food situation at the airport. I thought when we viewed the airport that they had the
the food situation, you know, beyond the gate, beyond the secured area, and the food situation, whatever, and, you know, before the gate. I thought that was all set up that way on purpose.
It was. But it's been pretty hard with no air traffic for the contractor to be able to make that food service function.
Okay.
They don't have the customers.
Okay. And so what are they looking into doing?
Possibly going out to RFP.
And I think one of the issues is that their business model had always depended on the business park, Cornell Business Park employees coming in for lunch or coffee or whatever. And now so many more people are working remotely, they're not there to come have lunch at the airport. So it sort of had started working, and then COVID hit. So
that's a good point.
And so is the company they hired before, is that company gone?
They're going to do an RFP. They're not working up there. They're not servicing at all right now. They're not.
Oh, so there's no food up there now.
Just the vending. Right, just the vending machines.
Okay.
They had trouble getting enough staff to be able to staff that in addition to their main operations, that company.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So it looks like we are in for severe thunderstorms and possible hail.
So power outage in Trumansburg.
If we could move this along a little bit quicker, that would be great. No rush, though. If we need to talk about a topic, we will talk about a topic. Okay, the Tiger Committee. Martha, chair.
Thank you, Shauna.
Spend that money now.
Thank you, Shauna. We met on July 13th. We are planning to have no August meeting, but we do need to move the September meeting of Tiger, and I'd sent a message out over the weekend, and only Henry answered, so I'll resend that. You answered about budget. Okay, so yes, sorry. So I'll resend that to find a time the week after the NYSEC meetings. So, let's see, we had a full meeting as usual. Charlie Krasanski from Cornell made his usual appearance. One of the things that was interesting, he said the Climate Act, they've had these advisory panels working for a year and then some on recommendations, and now staff is working with a consultant on how to integrate all this. He said the problem is the cost of all this is way beyond what the public and officials imagined. I'm like, really? I think we could have told you that. So they were not prepared for the cost. So we'll see how the rhetoric and the funding match up. I've already talked a little about redistricting and the hearings coming up. We talked some about marijuana. Kellis came. Assemblywoman Kellis joined us by Zoom, and we talked some about, among a number of things, including cannabis. The control board has still not been set up yet. There are various reasons for delays, for a delay of 18 months to 2 years on getting any of this going. However, she did say that the law has already decriminalized possession. That is already in place. So an expungement of records, I think, is supposed to also be happening. But this is what?
We're just trying to hurry up.
I understand. Okay. One other thing about the Emergency Rental Assistance Program. Her office is helping people get that, apply for the assistance. The state also set up a $100 million fund to create a safety net, especially for landlords. If a tenant leaves and there's no tenant to apply for ERAP, landlords can apply for the funding through that. So that's another piece of the housing fund. Housing situation. So stay tuned for a September date. Nothing in August.
Okay. Thank you, Martha. Any questions? Okay. I see none. Government Operations Committee, Amanda Champion.
Government Operations has not met. We will be meeting August 5th at noon. And I think that the resolution that's above my committee should be below my committee.
That's right. Yeah.
So I will go ahead and move that. I think we have a yellow one in our, or I have a yellow one. Anyway, appropriation from contingent fund, terminal pay, county administration, ID 10197.
And that's seconded by Rich John. Any questions for Amanda? I see none. Let's vote. All those in favor? Oh, sorry, short roll call.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Any opposed?
Okay, that passes. Any questions for Amanda? Okay, I see none. Moving on to the PEAK Committee. Ann Corman, Chair.
Hi, we haven't met, and you can check the agenda for next week. And two notable things I'll say real quick. We are having a presentation from the Community Food Systems Plan, so it's Monday at 1:30. And Liz Thomas will be here from Cayuga Lake Watershed Intermunicipal Organization to talk about the new funding formula for municipal dues. That's not on the agenda, but I'll add it that day. And that's it. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Annie. Any questions for Annie? I see none. Moving on to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Deborah Dawson.
Thank you, Shauna. Unfortunately, I can't be that brief. I just need to fill you all in on what happened at our special meeting yesterday, which was called primarily to enable HR to move forward with the search for our new county administrator.
We okayed the position description. We okayed the salary at $160,000 a year. We also okayed a range for a relocation allowance, but that amount will not be put in the posting. And I think that's everything. The reason I wanted to give you all a heads up about this is Lisa advised me that we either have to pass a resolution that increases target for administration in order to accommodate the new salary for the county administrator, or if we don't, then we're going to have to treat next year's administration budget increase as an OTR. Right? Yeah, which was news to me, but hey, you learn everything. You learn something new every day on this job. So you can expect that we will be bringing that resolution to you all next month.
Any questions for Deb? Martha?
Even though we don't expect to pay the new county administrator.
Yeah, that's what
January.
I thought the easy thing to do would be to leave it for the budget. But Lisa indicated that if we do that, then we have to treat that increase as an OTR. And I'd rather do it in August than do it with all the other budget stuff. So that's okay with all of you.
Any other questions for Deb? I see none. Thank you very much, Deb. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Henry Granison, Chair.
Yes, we've not met, and that's all I have to say.
Thanks, Henry. Any questions for Henry? Okay, I see none. Housing and Economic Development Committee, Martha Robertson, Chair.
Thank you. We have not met since the last legislature meeting. We meet this Thursday at 9:30. Looking forward to updates on housing from Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services and Law New York, and also Workforce Development and Southern Tier 8. Jen Gregory is going to be there in person. And did I say the one-stop center as well? So that's Thursday morning.
Thank you. Any questions for Martha? I see none. And last but not least, minutes of previous meeting, July 6, 2021. Can I have a
resolution?
Wait.
Whoa.
Resolution.
Oh, sorry, Deb. I got very excited.
You must be in a real big hurry.
I am in a hurry. I don't like driving in the rain. Okay, resolution I. Resolution establishing American Rescue Plan funding amount to be used in the county capital program. ID 10259.
Yes, this is a resolution that was actually put on the agenda more or less as a placeholder to memorialize whatever we all agreed on last night at Expanded Budget Committee. So I will move it as it appears in your agenda packet.
Glenn Maury?
I'll second it, but I also like to propose the revised
resolution in your red folder?
Okay.
Deborah can actually move the revised one if she wants.
Okay.
It can go through a committee.
Okay, well, I do, and I consider Glenn's amendment friendly, and basically this this resolution memorializes what we discussed last night. I do have one question that I will hold because Annie's itching to make another amendment. So go ahead.
Thank you, Deborah. I'd like to propose an amendment. So it would be on the first page, the second to last resolved at the bottom, where it says 100%. I'd like to change that to 95%. And then, so then the amount, so I'll read it. So then the total ARPA funds for 2021-22 and the amount, so the amount would be $18,854,000.
No, that would be 95% of the total. The total ARPA funds is in the amount of $19,847. You're moving 95% of that.
Which is why it's 18.
The way that I'm, unless I'm understanding it wrong, the way that I'm looking at this, it says to allocate, instead of allocating 100%, I would allocate 95%. So that would be a different amount.
So what you want to say is, or your amount.
Why don't you let Annie go through her amount, and then if there's questions or comments, we could do that.
So in the amount of $18,854,904 to government operations, including, so that I would change the percentage, I would take out the percentage and replace that with $15 million to be used for capital projects. And I'm not sure on the last resolution of how to, so I don't know how you want that worded as far as where you would get the money to retain services.
Okay.
So I would take a suggestion for that. But if I can I explain background on this while
go for
we
it,
think
Annie.
About that?
And I'll second it.
Okay. Thanks, Henry.
So this addresses what Henry and I and some, maybe at least one other folks were talking about last night. I had, or we had proposed 25% to be saved out rather than putting that into the government operation purposes for other things that might not be able to be covered from public money. So, for instance, economic harm to workers, households, small businesses, industry, premium pay. I'm not suggesting that which of these, if any, we would use that for, but this, so I'm just asking for a very small amount, 5%, to be saved in case there is something that we would like to spend it on. As I said last night, according to the survey, also, this correlates with what the survey said from our constituents, is that there are a lot of issues that they would like to be funded, such as this, so some of the economic harm to the community. So I'm asking for 5% to be retained for that.
Thank you, Annie. Martha?
So roughly $1 million goes for non-county, non-internal county purposes? Is that the idea?
Right, $992,003, right.
Okay. All right, I'm going to think about that. I have a question about the staffing, so the next two results. do we have an estimate of the cost? And it says interim administrator use some of the remaining.
So we're right now, Annie's amendment is on the floor.
And then we'll get to the rest of it.
Got it. Okay.
Any other questions? Sorry, Mike Lane.
On the amendment, I sort of thought we had this resolved last night, and the feeling that if there were other things that we needed to spend money on, we would be able to figure out ways to do that. I'm not in favor of this change tonight. I think we should stay with what we came up with last night.
Okay, I have Henry, Martha, Rich, and Dan.
Well, I'm for the amendment. In fact, I disagree with the original resolution. You know, we heard from Rick tonight about the fund balance, and last night we were ready to give $15 million.
No, we weren't.
I assume that that number is not going to be used anymore. And so, you know, Rich's handshake deal that he talked about last night has probably gone away. And so I think that we should in fact revisit this entire amount that we're going to contribute to the capital campaign. But that's just my thoughts.
Thank you, Henry. Martha, Rich, and then Dan.
Oh, I'm not assuming that the $50 million figure went away at all, but I want to know, the question is because legally we may not be able to spend county money on certain things.
We don't know.
So we don't know.
No, for sure.
Okay. And we don't know what the needs are until we get some proposals in, et cetera. It'll take a while to figure that out. So we could end up, if we accept this, we could end up deciding that, oh, well, we actually could use it all for county purposes if we want. But this still preserves the definition Lisa was looking for a capital expenditure, and that $15 million seemed seems like a reasonable number, so I will support this.
Rich, Dan, Amanda, and Mike Sigler.
Yeah, I will not support the amendment. I'm afraid that this small amount will get encumbered with remarkable reporting requirements, as we've seen in the Treasury rules, the highlighted areas. I'm not sure it's going to have any significant impact. And I thought we did, as Mike said, I thought we had resolved this yesterday at a pretty extended discussion. But to Henry's point, I'm not sure why you're saying that the idea of a commitment to apply fund balance to specific projects is off the table. I think that was exactly what I had in mind when I supported the the vote yesterday, was that we would be making a commitment, we would be funding projects on an ongoing basis from our fund balance over a course of years. How much and the number of years and defining the types of projects is what we really need to think about and decide, but the idea that we want to do it, I thought was we had consensus on that. So I don't think that's off the table at all, but I'll be voting against the amendment.
Okay, Dan?
Who is this resolution addressed to? Let me ask it a different way. Who are we committing to here? Are we committing to ourselves, or if we pass this, does this mean we file a report with the federal government tomorrow?
I think this is guidance for Lisa so that she can base our budget around that and give her some direction. Is that correct, Lisa?
Yeah, as far as the capital piece goes, yes.
The rest of it. So, okay. So suppose
isn't there a portal that has to be, that information has to be submitted to?
All that has to be submitted on that is the revenue loss calculation.
Okay.
So if we were to pass this amendment, and then some time goes by, and for various reasons, maybe the projects that we want to fund turned out we can fund them with regular government money, or we do find out that the reporting requirements are too onerous, is there any reason we can't at that time then plug that money back into the county to operations?
Lisa or Rick, would you like to answer that?
Sorry, if we draw down all of it as on the revenue loss calculation, are you asking if we can then use that funding to contribute back to the county? Is that your question?
I think I know what you're saying.
Well, I was asking if we pass this amendment, for instance, and later on change our mind for various reasons.
And we want to put that extra $1 million back into county operations. Couldn't we do that? I guess that's the question.
If all of our goals are met, are we able to meet all our goals and our what we see as the needs through county money, can we put that this money back in so we don't have to do that reporting?
I believe so, but without, I believe we can.
This is to ourselves, really. This is a guidance to ourselves, mm-hmm. then.
Right, so it's, how is it going to hurt? Right?
Great, thank you.
Amanda?
I'm not really sure what to say. I guess I understand, Anne and Henry, what your goal is, but I feel like the thing that we decided last night, like the only reason I'm agreeing to this resolution is because we're going to take some other funding and put it towards all the things that ARPA would go for, and helping communities, helping, you know, individuals, helping businesses, whatever it is that we want to do. And I don't think that handshake has gone away, Henry, and I would like to have a resolution that says that we're going to commit a certain amount once we figure out all the details and have that subcommittee that we were talking about to work through this. So it feels a little bit like muddying the waters, although I appreciate the idea. I'm not exactly sure how I'll vote.
Mike Sigler, Deborah, Ann, and then myself.
Okay, I'll be quick. To me, this is just an all-or-nothing choice. I mean, what Rich said, kind of, he already said what I was going to say, but, I mean, I thought we were doing this to escape the reporting requirements. If you're telling me we could go the exact opposite way and not do this at all and do the reporting requirements and hire somebody for $400,000 or whatever, and they do all the reporting for us, and we go that route. But it seemed to be the view of the body that would be very painful. And so if we're going to do this amendment and not escape the reporting requirements, kind of what's the point? And that's kind of where I'm at. And to me, this was kind of about getting the money out the door quickly. And I think we get it out quicklier? Oh, if that's a word, call Webster. But more quickly if we kind of do it, you know, to try to escape the reporting. So, anyway, that's my 2 cents. I won't use the word launder again.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks.
Deborah?
Yeah, you know, on the one hand, when Annie first mentioned to me that she was going to offer this amendment, my reaction was, yeah, okay, 5%, not a big deal. But, you know, this is exactly what I feared would happen, is that, you know, people would choose sides. God, people, can't we just make a decision and stick to it? I think I'm going to vote against this. I just, you know, I'm tired of butting my head up against the ARPA wall.
Anne?
So some people mentioned this is what we decided. Not everybody decided this last night. Some of us wanted to have 25% set aside. So now we're coming back and we're asking, lowered it way down to 5%, because as people have read, there's a lot of things for the use of the funds: economic harm to workers, households, small businesses, industries, the public sector, premium pay. I'm not clear at all. I'm actually pretty skeptical that if we decided we wanted to use some of the money for that I'm not sure we can use it. So if we if we have different goals that don't come under these headings, that don't come under these prior, these the designated uses of the funds, then we could put the money back in. But I would hate to have something that we have to have, you know, some, even if we possibly could do it, it could be some convoluted way to wash the money this way to give it back to the community. And that we spend a lot of money and have to set up this program that could not be, it could be easier to do it this way. And we just don't know yet. So what I'm just asking is, we don't know. So can we just set that aside 5%? I was asking, some of us were asking for 25%. We're asking for 5% just to be set aside in case. I'm not saying we have to, it doesn't say in here, I'm not suggesting where it's going to go, but I'm just saying in case in the future, because we can't then take it back out and say, oh, well, we want to use it and give it directly to households impacted and buy, you know, kids' shoes so they can go back to school. We can't do that.
Okay, guys, I know that most everyone has spoken at least once on this. I know Martha and Deborah have their hand up to speak again. What I would ask everyone is if you are saying the same thing that you said the first time, please don't. We don't want to be here all night debating something that we spent 3 hours yesterday debating. With that said, I also thought we had ironed out a lot of the agreement yesterday. And I do understand what you're saying as far as some of the things might fall between the gaps. But I do think that we have systems in place where many of those needs are being met and will continue to be met over the next few years. And I also, I really am fearful of the reporting of this because there's so much liability whenever we open that can of worms. And I do, in fact, think it will be a reporting nightmare. And I don't want us to get in trouble from a compliance standpoint for misreporting or not knowing the reporting requirements. So I will not support the amendment. Deb and then Martha.
Yeah, I just want to say we reached an agreement last night. The fact that it may not have been a unanimous agreement does not change the fact that it was an agreement.
Martha?
I think we take in new information and make different decisions all the time. I think this is worthwhile doing. I mean, Lisa asked for a capital commitment, but wasn't asking us to commit the rest, you know. So I think this gives us more flexibility, and we absolutely can end up using it for county internal stuff ourselves. But this, if that's how it works out, this kind of sends a message to the community that there's consideration for other things because we haven't heard from Jonathan on we don't know what proposals we're going to get, and we don't know whether we're going to legally be able to spend money for things that we might hear from the community.
Thank you. Mike Sigler?
I'll be quick. I hope in August we'll talk about dummy corporations and shell corporations. Then you'll know.
And tax avoidance.
How we do this. But I just want to say, listen, we live in Tompkins County, as you know. And if we lived in a different county that didn't have an agency for literally every single thing that you had a concern for, I would go, yeah, you know, you might want to kind of think about how you're going to spend this money. But I can't think of literally a need in this county that somebody doesn't at least try to address and just maybe is underfunded. And that, listen, if we want to take this money and we want to say, listen, we're going to treat mental health, we've actually got a way to do that. I mean, that pathway's set. And I am sure that we are allowed to fund our agencies, because we do and we have, and it's just writing a bigger check, basically. So that's how I'm looking at this, is that, so if people are watching, which some people are, because they've texted me, but I just want to assure them, like, this money isn't going to go into the black hole of county government not to reappear somewhere. We understand what the money's for. So, and we have the agencies in place to to kind of get the money out there. And frankly, they'll do it better than we will. So that's I just wanted to say that. So.
Thank you, Mike. I see no other hands. Let's go ahead and vote on the amendment. And I just want to reread that so that we're all on the same page. Resolve that this legislature directs the interim county administrator to allocate 95% of the county's total ARPA funds for 2021 through 2022 in the amount of $18,854,904 to government operation purposes, including $15 million to be used for capital projects. Does that sound right? Okay, let's vote on that amendment. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. That amendment fails. Back to the original, resolution. Martha?
So the question is...
Oh, sorry, all those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay.
Thought you had some.
Back to the original resolution. And Martha, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, I wonder if we had some of the remaining 25% for the services to meet administration, to meet compliance. And the next page, one full-time 40-hour-a-week position. Can we get any? Do we have any figure to plug in there? We usually have some kind of a dollar figure.
Lisa, do you want to answer this?
It's with salary and fringe. It's approximately $100,000 per year.
Okay. And are we? If we pass it like this, do you then have authority to go ahead and hire, or does it need to like designate X amount for the rest of 2021, which I'd like to do?
We didn't get into that detail, but I.
Can I say something here? There are some. This was a difficult piece of this resolution simply because I know that there are people in the legislature who would prefer that we contract out for these services. When Lisa and I discussed this, she said that the cost for contracting and the cost for hiring was about the same. And she can probably explain better than I can that she has two very good candidates for the budget analyst position, one of whom has a lot of auditing experience. And so her first thought was, well, I could hire both of them, cross-train them on the compliance piece as well as the budgeting piece, and move forward in that way. I was going to leave off that last resolved, but she advised me that I had to put it in or she couldn't make the choice to hire the person. So I guess this was the additional question that I had. I'd like to get a feel for what you all want to do. Do you want to hire somebody in pursuant to Lisa's suggestion, or do you want to explore consulting?
Well, so if I can just finish. So my thought is to respect what Lisa's asking for and make it happen as fast as we can. So if whichever
other people may have a different.
I'm saying what I'm seeing. So that's why I was asking if you needed anything additional to go ahead and post or hire for the balance of 2021. Anyway, so that's whichever flavor Lisa is looking for, then that's fine with me.
So, Lisa, would this just be under the assumption that you would hire that person as needed?
Yes.
Okay. Is that all right with everyone? Okay. Rich, John.
That was my question. I defer to the county administrator as she wishes to proceed.
Okay.
I will support the resolution.
Okay.
Okay, so in that case, we can just say that one full-time 40-hour-per-week position, blah, 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 is hereby established in the last resolved.
And then do we make a budget adjustment or something? I don't know. We can. Okay.
We can do that in August when we do the adjustment for the county administrator.
Can I just clarify the language in the last resolved? Can we change it to competitive class is hereby created? Change maybe to is hereby created. I'm sorry, changing the language to is hereby created.
Right. One full-time is hereby created. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Is that friendly to the seconder?
I can't even remember who moved.
Okay, any other questions or comments on this resolution? Okay.
Say one more thing.
You're killing me.
I don't think, first of all, last night we didn't establish the amount of this new program at 15. I mean, but I don't think that Rick's report necessarily forecloses some really substantial amount of money, like at least 10. So just hang in there, and that's what we'll do on August 10th. I don't want anybody to think we're, backing off Rich's proposal.
Thanks, Deborah. Okay, all those in favor, please raise your hand. Okay, that is 11. All those against, that is 1. Okay. Thank you all for that interesting conversation. Moving on to the minutes of July 6, 2021. If I could have a mover, moved by Amanda, seconded by Mike Sigler. Are there any questions or comments? I see none. All those in favor? That is unanimous. Thank you all. If I could have a mover to adjourn. Actually, is there any unfinished business? Nope. Move to adjourn.
I have another resolution.
All those in favor? Okay, thank you all.